to have to disqualify you now.
But I know I'm a good gymnast, a damn good one. And if I've got this talent, I should be allowed to make the most of it.
Take it all the way. Take it to the limit and don't look back now. No second chance, you're on your own now.
San Francisco, here I come.
Dr. Jardine, they are kids. They are kids. They are not guinea pigs.
The East Germans and the Russians are doing the same thing.
I'm Spice Williams Crosby from Fatal Games, and you are listening to Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Yeah, welcome back to the Hysteria Continues, episode 16, I think. I think last time we did this, I kind of lost count, so I blame that on the alcohol. Welcome again. Thank you for joining us. And also, I'd like to welcome my fellow slasher movie champions. Seeing as we're doing this week, our feature presentation is Fatal Games. So it's all about the winning, it's all about the taking part, and it's all about the dying. So welcome to, first of all, Eric.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm the bass player with the Sad Julians and Custer Distortion, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Wow. See, it's we've got all the big wigs and all the people that matter in the music industry. We haven't got Toya, but that's fairly self-explanatory. So, welcome, Joseph.
Hello, everyone. Joseph from The Body Count Continues, and I'm on a new setup this week, so hopefully I've eliminated my pregnant pauses. So, in a manner of speaking, I am taking it all the way.
Excellent. Well, that remains to be seen, and we see who will be coming in on number one and who is going to be number two. So, on that note, Nathan, how are you doing?
The second prize is death.
It is, absolutely. I mean, that's what we're going to be talking about, Fatal Games, later. The second prize is death. There's only going to be one winner, and we'll find out who that is. Very excited also to be talking to Spice Williams Crosby, who played the lesbian swimming coach in Fatal Games. And as I mentioned to her in the interview, she's the only person who got back to me. Nobody else wanted to talk about this film. And we'll discuss a little bit more about why that might be coming up a little bit later. But first up, we're going to do our usual thing. We're talking about some of our recently seen films. I think, should we start with that, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Well, how about you, Eric? What have you been watching?
Okay. Well, I had an unusual experience this week. I saw Moonstalker at the start of the week, and now that it's rolled around to Sunday, I just cannot remember one thing about it. I do remember that I thought it was fairly good, and it had some unusual murder methods in it, including death by hot water in a shower. But you know, for the life of me, I cannot remember anything else about the film. I don't know if does this ever happen to you, where a slasher movie just goes in one ear and out the other in double quick time.
Especially if alcohol's in
It was a weeknight, so I don't think I was drinking any alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so that doesn't apply for Justin. He'll drink any night of the week.
Any night with a Y in it.
Yes. So. The other one I saw is non-slasher, but, well, it's got slasher-related personnel behind the camera. It was John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars. I caught up with again. It was on Film 4. And this was one I thought was really ghastly when I saw it first about 10 years ago. Slightly better than I thought watching it again, but I still think that rappers should not be allowed near acting roles in horror films because they're generally awful. And I suppose the ultimate example of that is What's-His-Face in Halloween Resurrection?
Oh, Busta Rhymes.
Snoop Dogg, is it? Oh, Busta Rhymes.
Busta Rhymes.
It,
yeah. Which, yeah. I always remember that. It's hilarious, wasn't it? Because when I saw it at the cinema, they'd done a really bad job of kind of using his, you know, his voice. And he had the Michael Myers mask on, didn't he? And he was really muffled. It's like...
Yeah.
And then they redubbed it when the DVD came out because they made such a botched job of that. But yes, I think that was probably...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I always remember seeing that because I remember seeing it at cinema and thinking, you can't even hear what he's saying. It sounded like a comedy thing. I thought it was meant to be like that. But when I saw the DVD, or listen to the DVD release, they redubbed it so he wasn't quite as muffled.
Oh, just for that scene where he has the mask on?
Yeah, yeah, for that scene. But mind you, Halloween Resurrection is not the kind of film you can watch too many times, even though obviously you get to see the lovely, what's her name, from America's Next Model.
Tyra Banks.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately,
have a soft spot for Halloween Resurrection.
Oh, do you?
Okay. I do too. I think it's fun.
I think it's fun as well.
It's fun.
It's really bad, but it's fun.
It is. I mean, it is really bad. I'm the first to admit, but therein lies its charm.
The funny thing is, that's kind of one of those movies that you just mentioned, Eric. I saw it at the theater when it first came out, but I can't remember anything about it right now.
Wait, Halloween Resurrection?
Yeah.
Well, that was the experience. That's the experience I had with Moonstalker, and that was literally 5 days ago. I watched it, and this morning I cannot remember anything. I've been on a Justin style drink spender all evening or something, but I haven't.
I don't know where you get this idea from. Do you know what I'm drinking at the moment? Organic sparkling apple and raspberry drink.
Yeah, but there was a private email sent to you last night saying, can you ring me to test my new setup from Joseph? And you were like, oh, sorry, I'm plastered under the influence of wine and tequila.
Oh, yeah, I know. I vaguely remember that. Yeah. Oh, I do apologise. I forgot to phone you, didn't I? that's show business for you, Eric. Yeah. So I do apologise for that. But it's working fine, though, isn't it?
Are you talking to me?
I don't know. I'm talking to all of you. It's working fine. Yes. I think everything sounds okay with my new big blue one in front of me, the new microphone. So, like Eric, I've gone semi-professional, I kind of guess. Mm. So, well,
I've gone Android. I'm on my phone, so I'm hoping this actually sounds better than my mic setup, but we shall see.
Yeah, well, it sounds. We have no dropouts yet, so that's pretty good. Excellent. Oh, well, thank you, Eric.
I saw one other one as well, but I think Joseph and Nathan are going to discuss that, so I will join in with them.
Oh, would that begin with F?
Yeah.
It might.
Yes.
And it ends with F as well.
Okay. Well, shall we move on? How about Joseph? What have you been watching?
Well, I caught up on, well, not caught up, I'd seen it before, but I rewatched the Harper's Island miniseries. Mm. Took me about 3 days to get through it. And I have to say, without, you know, commercials and waiting weeks to see the next episode, I really, really enjoyed it more the second time around. Now, I think there are a few little plot holes and a couple of storylines that don't really go anywhere. But one thing that I really liked about the series is that all of the characters, even the ones who are meant to be kind of portrayed as assholes, they're really, really likable, and the assholes even redeem themselves right before they die. And I had a lot of fun with it. And you probably won't see a miniseries like that again for a long time. So, you know, for what it was a really excellent miniseries.
Mm. Well, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I think it was quite troubled, wasn't it? It kind of
it seems like they kind of made it up as they went along in places, but overall, I mean, it flowed well. I love the atmosphere, the whole misty, rainy island, and it's just, I don't know, I liked it a lot more than when I first watched it, and if I saw it for cheap somewhere, I would definitely purchase it.
Cool. And what else have you been watching?
I watched Eden Lake, which I liked a lot the first time I watched it, but we watched it at Grant's the other night. And while I still liked it, it just, I don't know, maybe hearing Grant and Jamie go on and on about how stupid the characters were, maybe it soured me on it. But I don't know, I found it's one of those movies that I like and I hate. For one, I like, you know, the whole atmosphere. I like the setup. I even like the main couple, but really, really, really pissed off at how the film ends. I mean, it's just really one of those depressing, I don't think I could watch this again, and I saw it twice in a week, so there's that.
I really
also caught up
to that. I know it divides people, but I really love the ending to Eden Lake. I think it's where a depressing ending works really well. But
I agree. I think that the way they ended it, I understand the message that they were trying to get across. I mean, I understand that, and I think the ending is appropriate in that sense. It's just like me just being a, you know, wear my emotions on my sleeve kind of guy. I just got really angry and wish I could have jumped in.
Yeah, but, the ending was really well.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The ending was really well done, for, you know, for conveying the messages that they wanted. But it's one of those, you know, the character. There's one character in that film that I literally wanted to choke the life out of, and nothing bad ever happened to him, and it was just really, really irritating. But overall, you know, pretty good movie. I liked it.
I mean, yeah, it's better to get a reaction than no reaction, isn't it? It's better to love or hate a film.
But I do have to say the character, the main villain, the kid, that guy is a really good actor. I mean, to make someone hate you that much shows that you're really doing a good job on the screen.
And he's actually a really pleasant guy, so he did a really good job.
What, in real life? Or
yeah, I saw interviews with him, and everybody on the set just loved him.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. But we say you've seen that, haven't you, Eric?
I have, yeah, and I had the same reaction as Nathan. I mean, I thought it was a good film, but the ending infuriated me. I mean, I can handle depressing endings, but that one really angered me. As somebody who just does not like chav culture or chavs, plural, it just wound me up.
Yeah.
But it's a very well-made film, though, yeah.
Okay, well, talking about that, shall we play a little bit of the trailer? You know, let's give it a go. See, because we've got this new setup, so we can actually play things ad hoc, as it were. So here's the trailer for Eden Lake.
So Kat's boyfriend is taking her to Paris for the weekend, and my boyfriend's taking me to a disused quarry. At your first opportunity, turn around. It's beautiful. Why don't we just find another spot?
I'm not going to be bullied away by a bunch of 12-year-olds.
Hey, guys, can you turn your sounds down, please?
Can't hear you, mate.
Steve, where's the beach bag?
It's got the car keys in it.
I just want my car back. Car keys, phone, wallet. You've had your fun.
First phone he sees, 999. Now we've got to finish this.
Run! Listen to me. Go get him. Go!
I've got to get us out of here. You hold on.
Yeah, well, that was the trailer for Eden Lake, which I kind of guess is a. I really liked it. It's kind of good twist on the old backwards formula, isn't it? Sort of updating, you know, the slash movie, which is kind of, can I guess, what needs doing, doesn't it? Time and time again, it's taking something that's familiar and something that works really well and updating it. So, any other thoughts on Eden Lake before we get onto that other Brit thriller
or slash? Even listening to the trailer wound me up.
Did it?
Yes.
Just hearing poor Jenny's voice.
I want to slap that chav from here to.
Yeah, but isn't that good? Isn't that good to get that kind of reaction?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Hey, like I said, the guy's a really good actor, I believe.
Mm. What, one thing I wanted to say that I thought was really funny is that the guy playing the, I guess the love interest, what is it, Michael Fassbender? Is that his name?
Yes.
I read some behind the scenes info for Eden Lake, and I thought it was really interesting that, you know, like they will, you know, like torture him. The kids like will torture him all day on set. And then after they wrap, he'll go take all the kids to the water park.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I read that he took them all to the water park. I thought that was kind of funny, you know, let's torture you all day, but hey, all right, let's go have some fun.
It's all make believe, isn't it? Which is, I mean, yeah. You know, that's the thing at the end of the day. And, we also, are you going to be, there's another film which we talked about last week, wasn't there, that you've, I think you've all caught up with?
Actually, uh-huh. before I get to that, there's one more I wanted to say before that. It's called The Perfect Host with David Hyde Pierce from Frasier. And it's sort of like a two-man act thing where this guy who looks a lot like Ray Liotta's son is like a two-bit criminal, and he's on the run from the law. And he stops in and he cons his way into David Hyde Pierce's house. trying to evade the authorities. And it turns out David Hyde Pierce is a little kind of loopy, and he ends up taking the guy hostage. And it's a really good movie. It's a good character study. It has a few faults, but David Hyde Pierce really, really puts on a good performance. And there's a lot of quirky humor and a few good plot twists. And I recommend it. I mean, it's not a slasher film. It's not really even a thriller. I mean, it's kind of more of a character drama with thriller undertones, but it's something I would recommend.
Okay, well, that sounds interesting. And okay, I haven't seen that, but it's always good to get good recommendations. And are you going to? I've got the trailer here for the next film. Shall I play that? It's very short. It's about a minute long.
Yeah, play that, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, here we go. Here's the trailer for the 2010 British kind of quasi slasher F, which we talked about last week.
This is London News at 7 o'clock. In our top story, there's been another violent attack at a North London school. The police have confirmed at least one fatality.
Hello?
A member of staff has been...
Who's there?
Who are you?
Come out
of here! No, please!
Help me!
I've had it with you, little brats!
Well, there you go. That was F, which we talked about last week. And I think you've all had a chance to catch up with it, haven't you? So what's your thoughts?
Okay. I can't really speak for Nathan or Eric, but I think F is probably in the running for the best film I've seen this year so far. The one thing I liked about it is that it's very, very unpredictable. I didn't really know where it was going. I had a guess that I'm going to try to do this without spoiling it too much, because I know it's a new movie and a lot of people haven't seen it, but the main teacher, I had a guess that he was going to be involved some way, but it turned out that they went a normal kind of different direction, and I really enjoyed, you know, having the rug pulled out from under me that way. And another thing I want to say about the film is that I found the bulk of it really, really frightening in places, really scary, and the faceless chavs, I guess we call them, they have no personality in this film. They're just silent. You can't see their face. They wear the hoodies, and they're really stealthy in the background. I mean, it's like total blackness in the background, and then all of a sudden one of them will just appear climbing on top of school lockers or even the walls, like doing like parkour stunts almost. But it's really thrilling. I really felt bad for the main character, and it's just a really, really, really good movie, and I highly recommend it.
Okay. Well, how about you, Nathan?
I don't understand all the hate that the ending for this movie gets. I mean, I don't understand, like, definitely directed at Grant, because he loves the original Black Christmas, which, you know, as you guys know, it has a really ambiguous ending. I mean, we're not, none of the dots are really connected at the end. I mean, we don't know any more than we did when the movie began. And that's the way F is. Yet, he gets really upset at F because it doesn't explain, you know, everything like he wanted it to. So I guess I don't understand that. But I agree with Joseph.
I think it was Jamie more than Grant Grant. I think Jamie's influenced his opinion, because when he's sitting next to him, he always gets Jamie's opinion, like it bleeds out onto him. And he just, you know, he goes along with him. And it kind of irritates me, but go ahead.
But I agree with Joseph. I don't know if I would say best movie of the year, but I really enjoyed it. Yeah, and then I thought that I really liked the characters. And one thing I did love about, you know, the main guy and even his daughter is I like that they didn't just take things, you know, lying down. You know, they fought back. I was worried because of some of the killings earlier in the movie that it would just be another one where, you know, all the victims just get killed, you know, and never fought back. I'm a big fan of victims actually fighting back in movies. I can't stand them for just give up and, you know, allow themselves to get killed. So, you know, I really enjoyed it, you know, a lot.
Okay, excellent. How about you, Eric? What did
you think? I did enjoy it a lot. I think it certainly didn't have the infuriating aspect that marred slightly Eden Lake for me. The fact that the chavs, for want of a better word, are personalityless. You don't see their faces. In fact, they almost have a supernatural element to them, and they kind of reminded me of the beings in The Descent, the way that they're sort of really stealthy, as Joseph was saying. They're like, they sort of leap in one bound from object to object, like parkour runners. It makes it feel almost supernatural at times. And, you know, no matter how close a victim or the camera gets to a hoodie, you never see their face. It's just total blackness, as if there's sort of nothing there, like they're ghosts. I thought it was really effective. The ending is ambiguous, but satisfactory at the same time, I found, because there are so many ways to interpret it that it leaves you thinking about it afterwards, which I suppose was the goal of the filmmakers. I don't mind endings like that. Endings like Eden Lake, on the other hand, leave me sort of with sleepless nights going, okay. F would probably not be in my running for my favorite film of the year. You know, off the top of my head, I can't think of what would be, but I don't think it's one I would go back to very often. I did... As Nathan said, I liked the characters in it as well. I liked, even though the daughter is a real bitch to her father for a lot of the film, I found her quite likable, and I can't really put my finger on why. But I did, and I wanted her to survive. And I, like Joseph said, I had my own idea that the ending was going towards Switchblade Romance territory, but it didn't.
Or it may have done. It's difficult to
know. It may have done, because that's one of the question marks you're left with at the end. It's like, who, what, why?
It's a possibility, but at the same time, it's not a possibility. So it leaves you thinking, and that's one of the things I was saying. Our friend Jamie, he doesn't like to think. He likes everything spelled out for him. And
the thing that got me thinking that it was leading to that, and obviously without trying to spoil it for people who've not seen it, but if you've seen Switchblade Romance, you'll know what we're talking about, but was at the end when one of the hoodies stabs the father, the teacher, and it seems like the girl, his daughter, has actually been stabbed instead. And so, but it's left quite ambiguous about what's happening. And that's what threw me, because I was thinking, well obviously something that was the, you know, the twist. But then actually listening to the features, they're not explicit about it at all. In fact, it sounds as if they weren't going for that. So it was, it was kind of interesting. I think it's a good film.
There's another thing you could say about that. You know how at the very beginning he gets headbutted by one of those kids wearing a hoodie?
Yeah.
You could think that maybe his mind was so gone that he projected that image of a kid wearing a hoodie as these, you know, faceless things trying to kill them, when in fact it was, you know, maybe him doing it. But they never really explicitly say it otherwise. No. You know, you have to make up your own mind where the film goes at the very end, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, well, you know, I'm glad you caught up with F. Sorry, have you got something else to say about it?
I just wanted to say I understand what Eric was saying about the daughter, like, you know, Greg and Jamie, you know, like, and I know a lot of people talked about what a bitch she is, but in my opinion, the reason I still found her likable is, I mean, if you look at her parents, I mean, the start of the movie, the dad is a huge wimp, like, he lets anybody run over him, and the mom is a big enabler, you know, she obviously is one of the, you know, mothers who, you know, like, loves to pit the daughter against the father, so the mom is always number one. So, I mean, I kind of understand why the daughter is the way she is. I mean, that she doesn't know any better. That's the way she was raised. So,
yeah. Okay. No. Well, excellent. Well, if you haven't seen F, is it out in the States?
On DVD? Or? No, I don't think so.
No. Okay. But it's obviously a miracle that you managed to watch it. But
yes, the baby Jesus frowns on me.
Okay.
For many reasons.
For many reasons.
But I give F an A.
Okay.
Ooh, nice.
That's a great plan for a poster. I should put that poster, Joseph Henson.
Yes. Exactly. I give F an A.
Well, there we go. So, well, thank you very much.
If you
want to
quote me for the DVD release in the United States, just cut out the baby Jesus stuff and put my I give it an A.
Well, let's hope the studios aren't listening, or maybe they are listening, because obviously it could go either way. But well, that's good. Yeah, I think it's a thumbs up all round for F. How about you, Nathan? What have you been watching apart from F?
Well, the only movie I watched, and I think it was because, you know, I was thinking of F and movies like, you know, Them or ILS and Eden Lake, you know, just the whole you know, those type of films, I went and rewatched The Strangers, which I guess is kind of the American counterpart for, you know, movies like ILS or you know, stuff like that. And I really didn't care a whole lot for it upon rewatching it. I will say this, The Strangers has one of the best trailers I've ever seen. Like, I thought that trailer was excellent and very scary. But when I watched the movie, I mean, just a lot of stuff in that movie really bothers me. And I think the way that movies like Them and, you know, Eden Lake and stuff, what they get right is, you know, we have little bits as the viewer, you know, we have little moments where the villains get killed or injured or something. You know, like in Eden Lake, there's a scene, and I'm not going to spoil it, but there's obviously a scene at the end, and you guys know what I'm talking about, where the heroine is in a car driving, and somebody runs out in front of her, and, you know, she mows them down, and that's kind of a rewarding moment where you just want to cheer for it. The Strangers doesn't give you that. I mean, you know, it's like nothing happens to the bad guys in that movie. They don't even get so much as a scratch on them, which I felt kind of was unrealistic. So I thought they'd at least get something happen to them, but they didn't. And that really bothers me. So upon rewatching The Strangers, I don't hate it, but I don't really like it that much either.
Well, there was talk about it being basically an unofficial remake of Them, wasn't it? Or Ills, or uh-huh. less. But there's also a sequel coming, isn't there, for The Strangers?
I heard that, yeah.
But it's not going to have the cast, surviving cast in it, I don't think. And of course, you didn't really find out who The Strangers were, did you, by the end of it? You kind of got a hint of who mm-hmm. they were, but there was no real background to who they were and why they were doing what they were doing. But yeah, it's a film. I think it's one of the things that when we're living in the times we are at the moment, we can't necessarily pick out the themes of what's happening at the moment. And I think we're starting to get a sense of that with The Strangers and Ills and Eden Lake and F, and that kind of fear of children, basically, isn't it? Of you've gone wrong, which is kind of, I kind of guess, all the way right back to The Bad Seed and possibly before. But it's kind of interesting to see how that's all working. And I think it's kind of it's something that in 10, 15 years' time, I think people will make quite a big deal of that kind of thing going on. So, yeah, it's interesting. Have you seen anything else, Nathan?
Nope.
No?
Okay. That's it.
Right, well, I've just got a couple of films that I was going to mention that I saw this week. The first, I'm going to talk about the Giallo. So I've been on a bit of a Giallo kick. And as you can hear in the background, if I reduce this a little bit, but this is the theme music from The Case of the Scorpion's Tail, which is a 1971, I think, Giallo by Sergio Martino, which has got a fantastic Bruno Nicolai score, which is playing in the background. Which I didn't realise until I listened to it. It's basically they've goblin nick bits of it, I think, for their much more celebrated score of Suspiria. Now the Case of Scorpion's Tail, is kind of it's a very standard giallo in a lot of ways. With a story of basically £1 million pounds being given out in life insurance and people trying to get their hands on it. But it's actually very, very violent, and it kind of predates the kind of slasher movies of the early 80s with throat slittings, somebody gets a broken bottle shoved into their eye, all in kind of very gory detail. It actually shows it in the same way as something like Friday the 13th would show you the violence. So it's Sergio Martino, so it's pretty well done. It's not as good as, say, Torso or The Strange Case, it's a Strange Case of Mrs. Ward?
Strange Vice.
Strange Vice, that's the one. It's not quite as good as that, but it's got George Hilton and Anita Strindberg in it, which are...
Oh, that's The Strange Case, actually. I can't remember.
Yeah. But any of you seen it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the one with the spectacularly unspectacular exploding airplane.
It is, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Which is very, very bad. I mean, that's one of the highlights, the lowlights. But apparently... when Sergio Martino made it, it was too short, so they kind of went back and shot loads of stuff in the in London of Anita Strindberg kind of running around the streets of London, and it's kind of a really interesting snapshot, I think, of London in the early 70s, where we've got these incredible houses which are all boarded up, like a whole street of them, which would be worth, you know, £1 or 2 million each, and it just goes to show what London was like in the early 70s. Can you hear the kind of, is it just me, or has that kind of got that kind of goblin-esque sound? Especially that kind of discordant.
Very goblin-esque, I believe.
Yeah. And this was 6 or 7 years before Suspiria. So I'm not saying they stole it, but obviously they obviously took some of those sounds.
Well, I think you are saying they stole it.
I am.
They were influenced. Influenced is the word you're looking for.
Absolutely.
I've just checked as well, Justin. It is the strange vice of Mrs. Ward.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Thank you. I think Baby Jesus frowns on Goblin. That's all I'm going to say on the matter. So, but that's what I've...
It's like Elastica and Wire.
Exactly. And the other film, it was a complete revelation to me, and I have posted this on the Hysteria Lives Facebook website, but I'm going to play the trailer. It's quite a short trailer for it. But you know, last time we were
I know what this is.
I think you probably do. But yes. Last time we were talking and we were saying there aren't any trailers with that kind of like, they thought they were alone, that kind of thing. But this trailer from 2009 does have that. So you'll hear what this is.
Every girl dreams of turning 16.
I only turned 16 once, so my party has to be perfection.
And celebrating in style.
My friends are gonna freak when they find out I reopened the roller dome.
Who wants to party?
But things don't go as planned.
What the WTF is she doing in my sweet 16?
I just saw your ex flirting in the hallway with this guy, Rotter.
They are not hooking up. You actually like that loser? What, do you have serial killer fetish or something?
The only reason Greg would talk to a psycho like you is if he felt sorry for you.
Madison's party is about to go from super to psycho.
Chloe? You psycho skank! You ruined my party! It wasn't me!
My father.
This October, everyone's invited.
It's like the party of the year.
No one escapes.
You can't ruin my birthday. No one can ruin this night.
My super psycho sweet 16.
So I'm a bully. I'm a huge bitch. I don't deserve to die for that.
Yes, that is was Super Psycho Sweet 16, My Super Psycho Sweet 16, which unbelievably was an MTV production, so it's like a TV movie. It was a complete surprise to me, actually. I'd heard about it, and it's been in the background, I've heard about it, and I felt a bit guilty watching it. I can watch, say, like Sweet 16 from the early 80s and not feel guilty about watching it. But being a man of a certain age, watching a load of 16-year-olds, or actually they were all in the mid-20s, I think, being butchered, I feel a little bit wrong, especially a film that's been made quite recently. But it was so much fun. I think this is the kind of film, when they redo slasher movies, when they try and capture the magic of the early 80s, this is exactly the kind of movie where it works, taking that's all good about the early 80s slasher movies, like taking a roller rink, reopening it after there's some murders there 10 years before, and having some sympathetic characters and also ultra bitchy characters you want to die, but not all the characters are horrific. And it has the most amazing scene I've seen in a long time, which has a roller skating girl being beheaded and then crashing into a birthday cake made out of sushi, which I think is fantastic kind of trash aesthetic. And I can't wait to watch the second part, and apparently it's going to be a third part. It was just a lot of fun. And I may go to hell, I don't care, but I really enjoyed that film. Has anyone else seen it?
No.
Oh, God, it's so good.
I love it.
I don't think you can make a cake officially out of sushi.
Well, the funny
thing is, I don't think you can class it as a cake if it's made of sushi, surely.
Well, this is the thing. The girl in it, who is played by, what's her name, Juliana something or other. She's in Gwilly or something. She was in Altitude, which is another film I saw fairly recently. And she was also in something else more famous, which I can't remember. But she plays the ultimate bitchy 16-year-old girl, and she wants a cake made out of sushi. And her dad makes her a cake shaped as sushi, and she has a big hissy fit.
She was in the Friday the 13th remake.
That's the one, yes. And she has a massive hissy fit, so they run out and then make a cake made out of sushi. but it gets destroyed by this girl who's roller skating, is decapitated as she's roller skating in front of everyone, just like prom night, and then rolls with her neck stump spurting blood across the dance floor on roller skates into the sushi cake, and then everyone stops for a second and starts screaming and panic ensues. It's just a lot of fun. But Nathan, you said you've seen it and you like it.
Oh, I thought it was excellent. I didn't expect anything when I first heard of it. I thought, oh, great, it's going to be another stupid one. But I really enjoyed it because it's like you said, I expected there to be a whole cast full of unlikable characters like we're used to. But no, this one didn't have that. There was the usual unlikable ones like you would expect. But, you know, there was some really likable people there, too. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I really love the girl played, like you just mentioned, that played the ultimate bitchy girl whose party it is. Mm. Because, like, she's so over the top that I didn't even dislike her. I thought she was a lot of fun to watch because her character is so over the top. I mean, when the headless girl crashes into her cake, that's her friend who just got beheaded. And she's screaming, my cake! Like, that's what she's worried about.
How about you, Joseph? You've seen it.
Yes, I really liked it a lot. It was the one and only reason to watch MTV because I haven't seen MTV in probably 17 or 18 years, but I saw the commercial for it and people were talking about it online, so I was like, okay, you know what, I'll give it a try. It'll probably suck, but why not? I got nothing better to do. And I was really surprised about how much fun I had with it. I mean, it gets so ridiculous and so 80s over the top towards the end that I just sat there, you know, my mouth agape, and I had so much fun. I was just like, this is like, if they're going to do slasher films, they should make them like this from now on. Why can't they get this formula right? I mean, these people are actually doing a good job, and I really, really enjoyed it. I recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric, I think you'll love it. It's got a girl in it who's got crimped hair. She's got gold hot pants on, and also leg warmers. On roller skates.
Cool. Can I just ask, for starters, is it set in the 80s or is it set in 2009 or 10,
It's a present day movie.
Yeah.
But it has a whole 80s vibe to it.
And what's
bizarrely,
the...
starts with Chumbawamba song, which may not mean anything to Joseph and Nation, but you've... that's one. Oh, yes. Was it a big hit in America? Because they're kind of anarcho-punks... in this country, so they were kind of smashed the system, so it's kind of bizarre. I think they were kind of, I remember back in the early 90s, they were a bit surprised that they'd had a big hit, because they were kind of really anti big hits, basically. So Eric, I think you should definitely...
Can I just ask, what is the humor in it like? Is it really forced? And
actually, there really is not a whole lot of humor in it. I mean, there's a few sight gags, like the whole roller skating and being decapitated, and then my cake. That's kind of funny, but there's no over the top humor in it at all.
If you think
most of the humor kind of reminds me of an 80s movie that wasn't trying to be funny.
Yeah,
it's unintentionally funny.
Oh, that's good.
Think of Heathers. Is that kind of humor? You know, it's kind of black humor, but not—it's not over the top splats.
Kind of gallows humor, I think.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And I see.
I think you really enjoy it, Eric.
Well, I'm definitely going to seek it out. Yes. I'm going to purchase it this week.
Okay.
I see. There's a part two, actually.
Yeah. Have any of you guys seen part two?
No,
I haven't. I just found out that they had a sequel, so that's one I'm going to look into in the next few days.
And there's a part three on the way, apparently.
Apparently.
Really?
Yeah. So it's going to be a trilogy.
It has been announced on Facebook.
Well, I knew it was a really big hit with MTV. It had really high ratings, so why wouldn't they make a sequel? And if it's as good as the first, then I'm down.
I didn't realize I know MTV made films, but I thought they were for theatrical distribution. I didn't know they made them specifically for their channel.
Well, they do make them theatrically, but they made one kind of a made-for-TV, which was My Super Psycho Sweet 16, and they released it just on the channel. I think it was the first movie to actually be released on the actual channel rather than going to DVD or theatrical. Oh, nice. But it was really surprisingly good.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, that's another one to look out for. I think that's we've already been talking about this for ages, but that's which is good. I'm sure hopefully you're enjoying listening to this. What we're going to do, what should we do next, guys? Should we talk about, go on to our top three, or should we do feedback? What do you
think? Nathan has a Nathan needs to play catch up right now.
Okay, yeah. Well, should we do that, Nathan? Do you want to do your little segment now? You're catching up on some of the stuff we talked about earlier.
Okay, this is another worst slasher, and this one, it's Axum. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's just a really, really bad movie. And I think Joseph mentioned it as one of his worst ones too. I mean, if you just want to see a bunch of people run inside a house and then run outside a house and then run inside a house and then run outside a house in really, really bad quality with hardly any sound and really, really ridiculous looking murders, then there you go. Enjoy. Have fun.
Do you know, I've never watched it. So I've no idea what it's like, but
count your blessings.
Really, is it that
so
bad?
So awful.
Yeah.
It's not even bad in like a fun kind of way, you know. Like there's a lot of movies that I like that, you know, are not good movies, but I mean they're still they have some redeeming qualities. Axum has none.
Well, I've got a little clip here from Axum. Shall I put it on?
Oh, yes.
Here we go. Now, I'm not sure if this is... Does this sound like it's Axum? It's got a black cast?
It's a bunch of muffled talking, then yeah, it's Axum.
That's Axum.
Oh my God, I can't take it. I can't take it.
Make it stop.
Make it stop. Is it that bad? I'm watching it, yeah. But it's Was it kind of one of the ghetto sort of horror movies? You know, we've
yes,
got black
it is.
Cast.
Yeah. Killjoy is better than Axum.
I have to say something about Axum though.
What's that?
There is
I have to use your phone. I just want to use your damn phone. Damn, no phone.
Sounds great. Someone's just been hit with a phone.
Quite lovely, quite lovely.
You better get with the program and act like you know.
Act like you know what?
You just smacked me out in these woods. Excuse me, you just smacked me out in these woods. You just smacked me in these woods. Listen, go ahead.
Wow, that looks pretty good.
I just have to say one thing about Axum. There's one scene that I found really humorous is there's an old man in the house and the killer goes into his bedroom to kill him and it has this camera zoom in on his face and he goes, "Ah, shit." It's just really funny.
So it's one of those films that probably looks like a lot of fun, but it's not.
It's absolutely horrendous.
Okay.
I dare you to watch it.
I'll watch it tonight.
Alone.
With a nice glass of Chianti. So, no, thank you, Nathan. If you've got anything else you want to say about the genius that is Axum. Because the very fact is that you say that's awful, but you love Splatty University, and it just sets my mind reeling. I can't imagine how bad it can be.
Well, Splatter University at least had some form of production values. I mean, and nobody in the dialogue talked over each other. It's almost like Axum had no script. I mean, because there's so many scenes where just the whole group are just talking all at once. Right. And I mean, how do you follow that? I mean, that movie is so awful. It actually terrifies me that it got made and distributed. I'm not one to use hyperbole, ladies and gentlemen, but the first time in my life I had the caca scared out of me.
The what?
The caca.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, we won't elaborate on that.
It was frightening that it got distribution. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, okay. Thank you, Nathan.
I'm also quoting Murder by Death for anybody out there that's seen that movie.
Okay. Well, it's one I haven't had the pleasure or the displeasure of watching, so I'm sure we'll get to it at some point soon. But what about you, Eric? Have you seen Axum?
No, and I think I'll stick with my Super Psycho Sweet 16, if you don't mind.
I think it's probably
as my homework for this week.
Okay. Excellent choice.
Good stuff. Well, how about, should we do some feedback before we get onto our top three?
Sounds good.
Has anyone got any feedback? I've got a couple of bits. Joseph, you got anything?
Yes, let me just pull this up here.
Sounds saucy.
It does sound saucy.
Let me just take it out here.
Ooh, misses.
Thank goodness we've got the webcam on. That's all I can say.
All right, this is from our good friend Tosca Topsocks again.
Hey,
he says, "Hello,
Tosca."
He actually gives the reason behind his name, this one, so pay attention, folks, because we're going to get to it. He says, "Hello, Justin, Eric, Nathan, and Joseph. Hope you enjoyed or are still enjoying your holidays. Thank you for the shout-outs on the Hysteria Continues podcast. I have to say that you made my day on a rainy morning in Birmingham quite tolerable." Anyway, he says, "I have just finished the Sorority Row podcast, and again, you continue to raise the bar with your knowledge of the genre and have me in fits of laughter with your witty banter and sometimes saucy shenanigans. To pick up on your recurring theme that most modern-day slashers are filled with unsympathetic, disposable, carbon copy characters, I couldn't agree more. A lot of today's output is populated with silicone-inflated honeys and beautiful boys that make some of the new horrors, particularly the remakes and reimaginings, into a little more than R-rated versions of Dawson's Creek. As for many of them being the next Jamie Lee, ha-ha, dream on. A lot of these films are also really mean-spirited and have none of the naive charm of earlier films. I suppose it was a slightly more innocent time, but today we are more likely to see a product placement for an iPad than any decent tension, thrills, or characters that you really care about when they bite it. Really annoys me that none of these guys and gals really seem to care about what film they are in as long as it can be used to further their career into more high-gloss naffness. What next, Justin Bieber in a hockey mask? Oh, the horror. They are not all bad by any means, but most of the best new stuff today seems to be coming out of Europe, particularly France, and if you haven't already seen it, I would highly recommend Inside by Julian Maury and Alexandra Bustillo. I guess that's how you pronounce it. It is just wow. Keep up the fantastic quality, guys, as nothing out there is quite like what you have to offer. Just a quick idea for the top few, for a future top three, the top three poop your pants number two moments. Mine would have to be The Strangers, where the strangers appear and stand motionless and only the audience can see them. Number two, Halloween, the asylum carjacking, and pretty much everything else in the film. Number one, Friday the 13th, hand coming from beneath the bed. I've been into horror since about the age of 12, and I'm 40 now, and that scene still scares the bejesus out of me. Take care, guys. Kevin, Tosca, Topsocks. By the way, it's an old nickname for my first job and related to my penchant for snazzy socks."
Wow, the mystery is unveiled. And
yes, thank you, Tosca.
Thank you, Tosca. I think it's a really good idea for a top three, actually, isn't it? It's top three scariest moments.
Yes, I like that idea.
Excellent.
Thank you, Tosca.
Thank you, Tosca. I've got a couple. I've got an email from Bradley Steele-Harding, who has said, "I've been meaning to tell you, I finally got around to listening to some of your podcasts. They are epic. Most are 90 minutes plus, probably a lot more than that, actually. I downloaded them in order, but several were no longer available or didn't download properly." I've not heard that before. We've had a couple of people saying they've had some problems with downloading podcasts. But if you do have problems, let us know, because if we don't know, we can't do much about it. But Bradley says, "The first one I heard was the Mortuary podcast. Very entertaining. I really like the team you assembled. Love the various accents. The viewpoints are all very incisive and fun. And now I've a list of films I need to catch up on. I'm currently listening to the Happy Birthday to Me podcast. Looking forward to hearing about what your friend Leslie has to say. Cheers, Bradley." So thanks, Bradley, for feeding back to us. That's brilliant. And also on Twitter, I had a message from Neil Lemoy, who says, "Great Bloody Valentine show, guys. Awesome interviews." And I've had a few other people say that we have the best interviews out of all podcasts, and we work very hard trying getting them for your listening pleasure, so I'm really glad you're enjoying them. So that's the feedback I've had so far. How about
thank you everyone, we really appreciate that.
We really do. Nathan and Eric, have you had any feedback?
No.
Okay.
You're gonna have to set up addresses so people can send you feedback, because I'm getting tired of hearing you sounding sad all the time.
You should get friends and family to listen to, co-workers, all sorts of people.
Yes.
But
I'm okay with making up stuff off the cuff.
That's what I've been doing.
We have no listeners. We make them all up. I mean, who comes up with a name like Tosca Topsocks? You know that's fake.
Yeah.
You better not be making fun of Tosca.
I'm sorry,
I've got
Kevin.
One from Susan Sexy Skirt, and she says she really enjoys the podcast.
Did you just make that up?
I got one from Amanda Hug and Kiss, and she really enjoys the banter.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that wonderful?
Thank you, Pat.
All those wonderful people out there in the dark. Right. Well,
actually, Joseph, if you, want to send us real email, the email address is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Brilliant.
Oh, and a little hint for all those of you who love the My Bloody Valentine interviews, we may have another one coming up. I won't say who, but I'll say we might have another one.
Yes. Keep on listening to find out who that's going to be. And lots more interviews coming up. And we've got an interview coming up with Spice Cross, Williams Crosby later from Fatal Games. Before we get to that, we're going to talk about our famous top threes. And this time, rather than saying our top slasher artworks, because we always get in trouble when we say about top anything, so we're going to say our personal favourites, I think it's probably going to be the safest way of saying it, because it's the kind of thing that divides everyone, really, isn't it? Everyone's got their own favourites. So we're going to do a top three favourite slasher movie poster artworks or video artworks or whatever we decide. So without further ado, who wants to go first? How about you, Eric? What's your number three?
Okay, my number three. This is a piece of artwork that I used to see all the time when I was about 13 or 14 on the video shelf, because it was a new release back then, and that shows how old I am. It's the video art, and I think it's the same, the cinema art as well, for Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. And this is the one where the gravestone with Jason Lives engraved on it is in the foreground. In the background is his famous hockey mask with a white light shining through it. And I just thought this made it look like the scariest film ever. This was a stage in my life where Amityville 2, The Possession, freaked me out and gave me sleepless nights. I mean, that's the kind of wuss I was back then. And this Jason Lives was the first Friday the 13th I ever rented. And I think it was on the strength of the artwork, because for all the films, in fact, I thought the artwork was very striking, even the sort of minimalist approach of parts 2 and 3. So that was my number three choice, Jason Lives. I mean, it was a kind of struggle to find which one I liked more, that or part 4, the final chapter with the knife through the eye socket of the mask, which I also love. But I went for Jason Lives for nostalgic reasons.
No, it's a good choice, because the Friday 13th films pretty much all the artwork was quite simple, wasn't it? Very striking. So, that's a good choice.
The only one that wasn't simple as such was the UK release of the original, because it was released by a different company. It was released by Warner Brothers over here.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you look in actually Teenage Wasteland on the inner sleeve, the cover folds out to the UK artwork, I believe, which is that sort of more complex montage of hand-drawn scenes from the film.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I don't know if I've mentioned it, sorry to it, but just on Teenage Wasteland, I've had confirmation that it's going to be published in the States beginning of next year, sort of February, March time. So if you haven't got a copy from the UK, then it will be coming out in the States at some point. So I'm not quite sure in what kind of format, or if it's going to be updated, or there's going to be any more or any less or whatever, but it's going to be coming out soon. So hopefully that will keep the Friday 13th artwork in it. But that's a good choice. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
How about you, Joseph? What's your number three?
Well, I just want to say before I pick my number three that this was a really, really hard, it was really hard to narrow this down to three. I mean, there's so many great, there's so much great artwork out there that it's really difficult to pick three. But in the spirit of sticking with the format, my number three is the Slaughter Hotel VHS artwork from the Gorgon video. And what it features is a gloved hand holding this medieval axe, and there's a face reflected in the axe blade, and in the background you have this this big house or hotel or mental asylum or whatever it is, and it's a hand painted artwork like they used to put on big box VHS, and it's really well done. Have any of you seen it? I know you have, Nathan.
Yeah, I used to have it.
Right.
Okay. No, I'm pretty sure I have seen it. I was going to say that we will be putting all of these on. They'll be on The Body Count Continues, won't they, Joseph?
On the Facebook, if you look up The Body Count Continues on Facebook, I'm going to have my three and Eric's three, and I'm not sure what Justin and Nathan are doing, but if they don't want to put theirs on their sites, I'll more than gladly put them on mine.
Well, let's put them on there, and also I'll put them on the – I'll do a little little gallery on the Hysteria Lives Facebook page as well. So it's well worth checking out. If you're on Facebook, check out the Body Count Continues and also Hysteria Lives. And also, of course, Axe to Grind blog. Are you going to be putting them on there?
Thank you, Justin. Sure, I'll put it on there too for all my 29 fans.
Well, that's good. You're in double figures now.
I know. I'm impressed with myself.
Yeah, well done.
I still haven't got to triple figures. I'm at 85.
Well, I'm not sure I'm at now. So something like, I don't know, 650 or something. But it's taken well over a year to get to that. So it kind of slowly goes up and then goes down and then goes up as things are liable to do. So, so Noel, thank you very much. And Nathan, what's your number three?
Colors. We can't get through life without seeing them. And my three artworks have particular color schemes. Does it sound like I wrote that down? Because I really didn't. I just came up with that right off the top of my head. And my first color is blue, and it goes with To All a Good Night on the media label. There's a school, and there is this thing above the school that scares the hell out of me. I don't know what this thing is, but it scares me so badly. Have y'all seen this artwork? What is this thing above the school?
It looks like an alien with a Santa Claus cap on.
God, I don't even want to look at it. I'm taking it off my phone right now.
Your phone, is that your my number three favorite. Phone?
I was looking it up on my phone while I was talking about it.
Okay. Yeah, I just think it's a badly painted Santa, isn't it?
Whatever it is, it works, because when I was a little kid, it used to scare me to death looking at that thing.
Well, we got the same artwork in the UK. That's on my video. Is that video cover is exactly the same artwork. And it's kind of, yeah, no, it's kind of, it, I think it's just a badly painted Santa, which has had the unforeseen effect of actually creeping you out, which is good, isn't it?
It works better than an actual Santa.
I'm looking at it here. I don't see a Santa hat on the face above the school. I'm wondering if I'm looking at the same version. It's on the media VHS label.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a bad quality print. I just don't see a Santa hat. I see the being with the black eyes that are sparkling and, yeah. Whoa.
Oh, sorry. That's just me. That was just me grabbing my copy off the shelf of the media one, which is, yeah, I don't know what it is, but I imagine it's some kind of face, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a weird looking face. It doesn't have a beard, though, and, you know, Santa usually has a beard.
Santa's usually a polar bear.
Santa's a bear.
Yeah, polar bear, specifically.
You'll scream till dawn.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's one of the great mysteries. But no, well, thank you, Nathan. That's an interesting choice. I'm glad to see we haven't been too Catholic, which I've been very Catholic with my choices. And the first one I'm going to go for, I think, is the Mutilator. Which I've got in front of me. I've got the poster. It's the video cassette poster, because there's two versions of the artwork, which has somebody with very hairy hands holding a kind of fish hook, a big, massive fish hook. And behind him are sort of hammered into the wall, sort of nails, and hanging from them are four teenagers. Now, three of them are dead. One of them's a girl with a kind of 80s spiky hairdo. Two young men and a girl in a green bikini screaming at the fish hook. And of course, if you've seen the film, you would know why she's screaming, because it's probably the nastiest death in the whole film is the one with the fish hook. And of course, it has one of my favorite ever taglines, which is obviously buy sword, buy picks, buy axe, buy bye. And it's put out by Vestron Video, who put out all sorts of good things around that time, like Slaughter High. And it's got a copyright date of 1985. And it's one of those really fun painted posters. It just immediately encapsulates what the Mutilator is about. In fact, the artwork's probably, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a massive fan of the film, but I think the artwork kind of encapsulates the fun of the early 80s slasher movie, which ironically actually the film itself arguably doesn't that much. But yeah, that's my number three.
So, can I just say something, Justin?
Good choice.
Thank you.
Yes, when you read the tagline, that gave me an idea for top three slasher movie taglines.
Exactly. I think we've got, you know, I was thinking about doing that. That would be really good fun. And I think one I'd really like to do is the top three trailers as well, our favourite trailers.
Yes.
I think we can start and then come back to those, you know, just in the same way as we should come back and do more favourite music, not top three favourite music, because obviously you got in trouble for that, but our favourite music. So, yeah, well, that's my number three, and we all know what's coming next.
Say it.
Okay, did you get a sound clip, Justin?
Did I get a sound clip? No.
You know, the bathroom.
The bathroom?
He's probably drunk. He doesn't remember what we're talking about.
I'm just trying to think.
You said you were going to put a microphone somewhere.
Oh, yes.
Did you get that sound file?
I didn't, but I do have a sound file here, and it's a cat flushing a toilet.
Oh.
I'm waiting for the cat to flush the toilet. Yeah. But it's obviously on YouTube, and the cat is... Here we go. So, Eric... Can we have your big number two?
Okay, my big number two. I better ask, does the word tuck shop mean anything to Nathan and Joseph? If I say the words tuck shop?
No.
Did you say tug job? Not tug job, no. That's a different thing. It certainly wasn't something that was going on in my school. A tuck shop you know what they are, Justin, yeah?
I do know what they are, yeah.
Yeah, it's a shop within your school that sells sort of sweets, and that's the pupils. And in our tuck shop in my secondary school that I was in the mid-80s to late 80s, they had the poster for Freddy's Revenge on the wall. They'd obviously been supplied by the local video shop or something. And the UK art I find very striking. And I remember one of the older kids telling me, yeah, the poster looks good, but the film's absolutely rubbish. But of course, I was having none of it because this poster was so fantastic. It has Freddy with his arms outspread, wielding his blades, but the blades are actually growing out of his fingers, as they do at some stage during the film, rather than him wearing a glove. And then underneath him is sort of the runaway school bus. And I always loved that artwork. And actually, there's a second poster as well. This is all hand-drawn. It's a second poster that was done in the UK as well. That's predominantly Freddy on the right-hand side of the frame with the blades up to his face. And then on the left-hand side, there's the runaway school bus. But both of them, I'm cheating here, both of them are my big number two. And of course, Freddy's Revenge is a film that I'll defend to my dying day. I still think it's utterly fantastic from start to finish. And I don't care what the detractors say.
Well, no, thank you, Eric.
That's a good choice. I really like that artwork that you showed me
too.
The UK quad.
Had you seen it before?
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago, but yeah. I'd forgotten about it. It's really good.
I was surprised that the US artwork for all of the Nightmare on Elm Street films were completely different.
Yeah, it's just rubbish. It's just a picture of Freddy. Just a picture of Freddy holding his glove up. I mean, that's boring.
Part three was all right.
Yeah,
where he's holding the glove out, and the people are standing on each blade.
Yeah, but we had different ones for that as well. For part three, we had Freddy in his overcoat, you know, a specially done publicity shot. Huh. Freddy in a long overcoat, sort of swinging around.
I'm gonna go look these up.
Yeah. Hmm. So as far as I know, for all of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, we got completely different artwork to the US.
Yeah, which is funny, isn't it? Because it's much more homogenized now, isn't it? That we get the same as America, pretty much. And also, you don't really get painted artwork anymore at all, do you? It's all kind of photos. So
yeah, it's the stars sort of assembled in various different ways.
Absolutely. You know, no. Well, that's a great choice. Thank you, Eric. And I was just before. Sorry.
No, I just said thank you.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, it's just say if you do look up flushing toilets on YouTube, there are hundreds of cats. Pictures or videos of cats flushing toilets. So if that's your thing, but one thing it does demonstrate is obviously cats are more intelligent than dogs. But there's also something saying, is it a good idea to microwave poop? So we won't go there. So we'll move on to
for what
don't
reason?
Shoot the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger.
What reason is it good to microwave poop?
I don't know. It's just I don't want to click on that link. I'm not going to click on it. So we move swiftly on to Joseph's number two.
All right, my number two is the Wizard Video VHS for Headless Eyes. Mm. Now, what it features is a close-up shot of an eyeball, and the cartilage is, or I guess you call it cartilage or whatever, it's the tissue that's connected to the back of your eyeball. It is connected to a trail of blood, and then the trail of blood leads way back in the background. There's a dead woman laying on the ground in the city, and obviously her eye's been plucked out, and then behind her is the city. And Wizard Video are very famous for having some of the best artwork, and I think of their entire catalog, this particular VHS was probably their best. It's have any of you seen it?
Yeah. I've seen the artwork, yeah. I haven't seen the film.
The artwork is amazing. The film, not so much. It has a really good ending, but no. The artwork is incredible, though.
Sorry, the link you sent me, Joseph, for that artwork says, too gory for the silver screen. There's a little sort of...
Yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot to mention, there's a little label. It says, too gory for the silver screen. Obviously trying to sell the film, not to tell anyone it's a big piece of shit. They probably want to... they probably wanted to, you know, hype it up a little bit, saying, wow, this movie is just so bloody and so nasty and disturbing. But it's a real number two. But the artwork is amazing. One of the best.
Well, that's the thing. Quite often with these, the videos, it's kind of, it was like, you know, that old adage, you should never judge a book by its cover. Same goes for video covers, isn't it? And promotional artwork. In fact, it probably has that whole thing that the worse the movie, the better the artwork you have to make it, because to try and sucker people in to watch the film. So that sounds like a perfect example.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, Joseph. How about you, Nathan?
My second one, going along with my color scheme speech from earlier, this one's green. And it's the artwork on Magnum Video for Poor White Trash Part 2, a.k.a. Scum of the Earth. Which I really like that title, Scum of the Earth, but we're not talking about titles. This box is it features a girl in like a tattered, it looks like a nightgown maybe, or a slip or something, and she's running through the swamp, and off in the distance there is a large hulking figure holding a big battle axe. I always liked this artwork. I always thought it was it's drawn really well, really detailed, and I always want to know, what is that thing holding the battle axe that's after her? Because obviously this artwork doesn't have much to do with the movie, except it takes place in a swamp. Good artwork.
Yeah, because the British artwork was... is this Poor White Trash 2, you say?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because in the British artwork, the pre-cert one has a photograph of a woman with barbed wire around her neck, I think, and blood around her mouth. So it's a bit
And that's
graphic.
In the movie.
Is it? Okay. Because it was, wasn't it, Poor White Trash was a kind of exploitation film, wasn't it, from the 50s or the 60s? And so it wasn't really a sequel as such, was it? A sequel in name, I think. I haven't actually seen it, but have you seen the, obviously seen the film?
Yes, I really like it. I mean, it's a slow-moving film, but I think it's got a lot of interesting ideas in it. And, you know, it's a pretty good, you know, kind of trashy, backwoods kind of movie.
Cool. Excellent. Well, no, thank you, Nathan. I mean, just moving on with my big number two. Again, this is a big bit more of a kind of a Catholic sort of choice, and that is Terror Train, the American one sheet for Terror Train, which I actually have up in the room just behind me. And in case you haven't seen it, I mean, it's a very famous artwork, especially amongst slash movie aficionados. And it has the killer painted. Again, it's painted. It's not a photograph. The killer in the conductor mask and bringing down the knife, and you can tell the knife's being brought down very, very fast because there's blur lines above it, and he's kind of hovering over a scene of all of the teenagers or students outside of the train around a kind of campfire or a fire, and they're all laughing and smiling. So it has that kind of juxtaposition of the kind of happy, smiling students without a care in the world, and the killer hovering above them like the angel of death, waiting to get them. And again, I know we're not talking about taglines, but it has the classic tagline of the boys and girls of Sigma Pi, some will live and some will die, which I've always loved. And one of the things, I think reading actually the Jamie Lee Curtis book, Scream Queen, that they said one of the reasons Terror Train didn't make as much money is they actually play down Jamie Lee Curtis's involvement in the film. It doesn't scream at you that this is a Jamie Lee Curtis movie, but I do love the artwork. And I also really like the British artwork for the film, which again is very different. It's kind of black and white image of Hart Bochner about to be decapitated, and I think the tagline is something along the line of "Don't bother buying a return ticket, you won't be coming home," which again I love all those kind of taglines. So yeah, that's my big number two. So I think it's what we need now actually need is a drum roll, don't we? I don't have a drum roll, but I can a cat doing a drum roll. Shall I have a look?
Can you find that on YouTube?
How about a drum flushing a toilet?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Well, here we go. Well, let's have a look. Let's see. This there you go. Isn't that
excellent?
The wonderful, wonderful, you know, up to the minute.
We're getting better and better. Our production values are getting
seamless,
better.
Seamless, yeah.
Okay, well, on that that note, Eric, what's your number one?
My number one is the classic skull pumpkin image from Halloween 2. This was a poster I used to have above my bed when I was still living at home. Just a fantastic image that I think captures, you know, it captures the Halloween ambience really well, and the menace as well, with the skull sort of embedded in the pumpkin. And it ties in nicely with what is my favorite opening credit sequence of all time, where the camera slowly pans into the pumpkin and it slowly opens to reveal a skull inside it. I just think it's amazing, and I think it's absolutely astounding that subsequent reissues of Halloween 2 constantly you go for different artwork, when I find this artwork just perfect. I know it's coming out on Blu-ray shortly with, you know, again, once again, you know, another different design for the sleeve, but I just wish they'd, you know, stick to this design, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And yeah, as I said, it was on my wall. It was my equivalent of having Farrah Fawcett or Kim Wilde on my bedroom wall. This was my pinup back in the day.
It's very iconic. Mm. Very, very iconic.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And you didn't have Toya pinned up on your wall?
I had Haircut 100.
Okay.
I don't remember about Toya.
I think Justin was asking if you actually had Toya pinned, like with shears or something.
Oh, right, like comic book guy.
I wasn't, but what a lovely mental image that would be.
Like,
it'd be quite cheap enough to do it these days. So,
sorry?
Hire her out for the day. Should be cheap enough. So, sorry? No, I think that's a great choice for number one. I think it's classic artwork, and it really rivals the original Halloween pumpkin image.
Well, I think it's much better than the original Halloween pumpkin, personally. Mm.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's much better than the original poster.
Okay.
Do you not think so, no?
I do love the original. I think it's just because we've seen it so much that it's almost been damned by over-familiarity, possibly. Mm. But I do love the Halloween 2 image. And in fact, if you hadn't have chosen it, I probably would have done so. So, you know, that's testament that I really like it. And I think it's a real shame that with the new Blu-ray artwork, they're not using that. They're basically, it's not too bad. It's like a Photoshop job, but they're basically doing it so it looks more like a Rob Zombie movie than Halloween 2 1981, which I think is a bit of a shame. But, you know, they know what sells Blu-rays. So that's how it goes, I kind of guess. But excellent. Well, thank you for that, Eric. And I'll give you, Joseph, your own little drum roll, and here we go.
Thank you, Justin. My number one is the Video Gems VHS for House of Death. Now, if you've seen the Virgin Vision VHS of House of Death, it's basically just a person holding a machete in a window sill, and it's not that great, but the Video Gems version is fantastic. It has it's hand painted. It has an open mouth screaming, and inside the mouth is the body of someone decapitated, and they're hanging upside down, and the head's on the ground. And in the background, you see the cemetery. It's like I said at the beginning of our top three. It's really hard to narrow all this down, but if I really had to pick one that I really like more than any of them, then this actual artwork for House of Death would best them all. I mean, it's really, really that detailed and that well painted. And of course, I do love House of Death, but we're not talking about the actual film. But it's just a really good image. I mean, I know Nathan has seen it, but what about you, Justin and Eric?
I really like it. It's great, isn't it? It reminds me a little bit of Nightmare at Shadow Woods.
Blood Rage with the knife and the feet. Yeah,
right. Yeah, similar kind of artwork, isn't it? That kind of painting.
See, I almost picked that one, but it was my number four, actually.
Okay, yeah. No, that's great. No, it's a great choice. How about you, Eric? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. And it is fantastically over the top kind of.
Yeah.
And I can imagine myself, you know, not knowing anything about the film and seeing it on the video shelf and being instantly drawn to it. He wants your body in pieces.
Another great tagline. Mm. Great tagline. So, no, well, thank you, Joseph. That's a great choice. And Nathan, I'll give you your own little drum roll. Here we go.
Thank you, Justin.
That's my pleasure.
My final one, final color, is black. And this movie, actually, I have a little story about it. There used to be a video store called Best Way Video where I lived. And, you know, the front of the video store was always really bright and stuff, but it was kind of a weird setup where you had to round a corner and circle into this other little area in the back, which was very dimly lit, and that was the horror section. So, like, going to this horror section was creepy enough because, you know, it was kind of in the back area and, you know, it seemed really secluded. And every time I went back there, sitting on the shelf was this giant big box version of Once Upon a Frightmare, which is, you know, Pete Walker's Frightmare. Mm. And this video box has a deranged woman, which is Sheila Keith, and she's holding a big drill, and she's kind of holding it out, like, towards the person looking at the box, like she's going to kill them. So, you know, you can imagine a young kid, you know, me being, like, 6 or 7 years old, seeing this, you know, VHS, I'm just, you know, going crazy, like, you know, I want to rent it, but I'm too scared to rent it. And, you know, I mean, it is a fantastic film, but, you know, that artwork just always scared me because, you know, just the blood on the end of the drill and the blood kind of dripping out of her mouth, and she just has this really psychotic look on her face. I think everybody should look up Once Upon a Frightmare on Google Images so you can see what I'm talking about, or go to the websites, like we said earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's. I love that film. I love that film. It's a different artwork to the British one, isn't it? Which has got Sheila Keith, kind of in that nightmare scene in the film where she's kind of her face is almost kind of whited out, and she's got the blood around her mouth, and she's kind of handing the package, which is dripping blood, over to somebody. But yeah, that's a great choice. It's really.
Can
good,
I just
actually.
Say her face on the box looks like the killer from Mortuary.
Okay. Yeah,
it's very frightening.
Yes, yeah. That's a good choice. I like that one a lot as well.
Brilliant. Well, it's really good that we've all gone for different things, and you've. I mean, I've gone for, say, quite Catholic tastes of things, but it's good to get some more obscure artworks as well. And so, before we finish, I've just got my number one. So I think it's only fair to give myself a drum roll. Okay, well, mine is, perhaps it won't become as a massive surprise to people, but mine is the Universal artwork for, as in not the studio, but just used everywhere, for Happy Birthday to Me. And again, we've spoken about this many times, and I'm sure I'll talk about it many times again, but it's the artwork of the model, because it's not actually anyone in the movie, about to be shish kebabbed. Recreating the scene in the film where somebody is fed a shish kebab and it's pushed through the back of their throat, and the poster uses that to great effect. Apparently the producers didn't like it. They thought it's too gimmicky, which is a bit bizarre considering how gimmicky the film is. But again, it's got the incredible taglines of 6 the most bizarre murders you'll ever see, John will never eat shish kebab again. And then it goes, and Stephen will never ride a motorcycle again. Greg will never lift weights again. Who's killing the school's snobbish top 10? And at the rate they're going, there'll be no one left for Virginia's birthday party alive. And then pray you're not invited to the party. So I can't think of anything else that's going to sell a film as well as that poster. And possibly that was why the film was quite a big success when it was released in 1981. And certainly it's a big success, bigger success than films like The Burning or The Funhouse. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's a very iconic image. And it's the image I chose for the back of Teenage Wasteland. So, yeah, enough said. So there we go. That's our top three.
Well, can I just add, Justin, that the most horrific thing about that image on Happy Birthday to Me is that there's some aubergine on the shish kebab. Ugh.
Do you not like aubergine?
Some what?
No.
I think you call it eggplant.
It's Satan's vegetable.
We got some.
I like eggplant. I think it's delicious.
I don't mind it.
Well, I'm
Have
so happy
Have you not seen Student Bodies? A girl gets killed with eggplant in that movie.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. It's vile.
There's also a video game called Adventure Island where if you pick up, it's for the Nintendo Entertainment System. If you pick up an eggplant, it'll kill your character because he doesn't like eggplant.
That character must be me.
But I like eggplant. I like eggplant lasagna. It's really delicious.
Mm. Ugh.
Well, there you go. So you get all the discussions on Hysteria Continues from slasher movies to culinary.
That's an aside. We call those an aside.
An aside, absolutely. Okay. Well, I think we've done every. I think we're coming up to our feature presentation, aren't we? After 1 minute, what's that? 1 hour and 20 minutes. So we've had a lot on this preamble, which is great. I hope you've enjoyed it, and you're not too pissed off waiting for the for our feature presentation. And what we're going to do now is, before we get to it, play the trailer for 1982, actually's Fatal Games.
New generation of Olympic athletes. They are trained to reach perfection at the top of their class, and nothing will stop them from reaching their goal. Competing in the next Olympic Games.
What are we gonna do?
Get any leg!
Talk to you Thursday. Hi.
What's the matter?
Swellen's parents called my folks last night. They got the police out looking for him. And the coaches know all about it. They haven't said a word to us. We find that a little strange.
As the laughter fades, the terror begins. Someone is stopping the nation's top athletes dead in their tracks. Someone has the killing touch. Winning is everything, but at the Falcon Academy, death is the first prize. The killing touch. You win, you die.
There you go. That is the trailer for Fatal Games, obviously under the original title, which was The Killing Touch. What I'm going to read, actually, I've got in front of me here, I've got the Merlin VCL release. A pre-cert release put out in the UK probably in the early sort of mid-1980s. So the back of the video is a short little synopsis, and it says, echoing what it said in the trailer, someone is stopping the nation's top athletes dead in their tracks. What is happening at the Fulton Academy of Athletes? One by one, the young competitors for the 1984 Olympics are facing a race against death at the hands of a javelin-hurling madman. Is potential champion Annie Rivers fast enough to outrun the killer and stay alive? She must use every trick and every turn in the book to stay ahead in this deadly game. There can only be one winner in this contest. Only one will finish. Fatal Games. Their mistake was to even compete. So, yes, Fatal Games. It's probably one of the most obscure films that we've covered so far on the podcast. Because it barely got released. I'm going to talk more about the background behind the movie after we've spoken to Spice Crosby Williams, which will be coming up shortly. But just to say about the film, it is one of the cheesiest slashers, and I think that's part of its fun, and it's an attraction. I've seen it plenty of times, and I never tire of it. It's a pretty awful film. Let's be, you know, not put beat around the bush. It's badly put together. It's a lot of the performances are pretty dreadful, but part of the joy is actually in that. Encapsulates a lot about early 80s madness and the slasher movie. In fact, the film was shot at the tail end of 1982 and also into the early part of 1983, so it actually fits very well into the canon of slasher movies released around about that time. I've got plenty more to say about the film, but I'll pass it over to you guys because it'd be interesting to hear what you think about it. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I agree with your sentiments there. I think it is incredibly cheesy, and therein lies its viewability. This is like for the second week in a row, I found myself having to completely revise my opinion because on the last podcast we were doing Killer Party, which was a film I'd written off and thought was rubbish. But then on subsequent viewing, I found actually it's quite good, and it's the same with Fatal Games. I always bunch this together with Graduation Day for obvious reasons, and I always thought it was of a much lesser film than Graduation Day. But upon watching it again this week, I think it improves on Graduation Day in a number of areas. I think it's slightly more cohesive, and it has, you know, a stronger narrative, and there are some much better murder sequences in Fatal Games. I mean, there's a terrific underwater murder that's actually technically very accomplished, even though in concept it's really ridiculous. That's the scene where the killer puts on a scuba diving outfit and hides underwater as this athlete practices swimming lengths. And there's another murder that has a sort of a strange feel. It's where the weightlifter gets speared with the javelin, and the film almost seems to speed up or something, giving it a cartoonish effect as she's pinned against the wall. And I love the murder of Nicholas Love. He's the actor from The Boogeyman who is he plays a character in this who's a javelin thrower himself. And he gets speared with a javelin, and the killer must be at least 100 yards away. And the javelin travels at like 500 miles an hour and pins him to the ground. Mm. I love the opening theme song, of course. You can't have a slasher of this kind without a sort of a sports montage theme song. Take It to the Limit, is what it's called. Or is that right? Take it to the limit?
It is. Well, the film actually had a soundtrack released, apparently.
I saw that in the credits, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I've got it written down here who it was, actually, who did the music.
Yes, it was an Israeli guy, yeah.
Yeah, Shuki Levy and Deborah Shelton, Take It All the Way.
That's it.
Could have rude connotations if it was in a different type of film, obviously.
However, I mean, like Graduation Day, there are a few characters in it that was kind of hard. I found it hard to keep track of who was that person again. I was finding myself saying sort of later on in the film. I mean, you have to watch it I had to watch it a couple of times to find out exactly who was who. I mean, I was able to follow like the story of the final girl who has the George Michael haircut. She was easy enough to find. I found it had a kind of a strange ambience. It reminded me in parts of, have you ever seen the Clonus Horror?
Yes. Well,
that film that was like The Island.
Yeah. Mm.
It had that sort of feel of all these sort of physically perfect young teens being pumped full of drugs and living in this kind of cocoon, campus, which I thought was gave a sort of an interesting feel. I think it does, as you said, Justin, it relies too much on its cheesiness for its entertainment value. And I think if you show it to somebody who doesn't buy into that, they're going to hate it. They're going to find it stupid, and they're going to find it really, really boring. Although, having said that, I do think the last 15 minutes are very effective, and I do think it trumps Graduation Day in being a more effective horror film. But I think Graduation Day I prefer slightly more, if only for Felony and Vanna White in it. But I did find it surprisingly good fun, like really, really good fun, and I would recommend it to slasher fans.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Eric. How about you, Nathan?
Oh, yes. Fatal Games is a really, really fun movie. I like the idea of the javelin as a weapon. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it's really ridiculous. It's really cheesy. It's got some really bad acting in it. And, you know, I really like the music in it. That's one of the things that stood out to me. I thought the music was really good, cheesy, and maybe even a little creepy at times. I mean, especially I love the music when the nude girl's getting chased around the school. I mean, how cheesy is that? The girl's totally naked being chased in a school after hours by the killer with this giant javelin. I mean, that's just one of my favorite scenes in the whole film. Fatal Games is, it's definitely not going to make my top, 10 list anytime soon, but it's really good cheesy fun. That's what I have to say.
Excellent. Well, I've got a little bit of the incidental music here, actually. We'll just have a little listen to some of it in case you've not heard it before. You heard a little bit in the trailer, but here's some more of the incidental music for Fatal Games. Well, that's some very, very early 80s. I think you can listen to, if you listen to that, it screams early 80s. So how about you, Joseph? What did you think?
Well, I guess it's my turn to say that you've pretty much covered everything I wanted to say, except for a couple of things. But I wanted to mention the killer has so much dexterity. I mean, throwing this javelin from atop the bleachers like 500 yards and nails the guy with one shot. And then there's the part where Eric was talking about where she throws the javelin and it pins the woman against the wall. But not only does it pin her against the wall, it actually lifts her off the ground. So she's hanging. I mean, you have to have an arm for that. How does this even work? And then, of course, the scuba death. Obviously you've been underwater. It's really hard to move underwater. How are you going to pin someone underwater? I mean, this killer must be, Mr. or Mrs. Universe. I mean, it's crazy. It's really good cheesy fun, and there's so much nudity in this movie. I mean, Nathan mentioned the naked chasing in the school hallways. People just find reasons to take off their clothes. Like the one guy starts tickling his girlfriend, and she immediately removes her shirt, and they're in the shower. And then people in the locker rooms just standing around naked. You know, when I was in school, no one ever got naked. People didn't even want to go in the locker rooms, let alone prance around naked. There's the really funny, kind of subtextually funny scene with the guys in the locker room having the towel fight, snapping each other in their towels. I thought that was hilarious. And then another scene I really liked, it was really funny, it was the killer chasing the guy on crutches towards the end of the movie. Kind of echoed Island of Blood a little bit. They both had scenes where someone was hobbling away from the killer on crutches. I kind of got a kick out of that. But the movie itself, totally cheesy, probably cheesier than Graduation Day. I mean, completely ridiculous, over the top, just cannot be taken seriously, but a lot of good fun. And yes, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Joseph. I think it is, it's ultra cheesy. And one of the things you said about the nudity, it's got more nudity in it than 20 slasher movies put together. But not the irony, but pretty much all the nudity is female, isn't it? Because in the shower sequences, which there are two or three sequences where you've got like women stood around naked, a bit like the kind of beginning of Slumber Party Massacre. But in the male locker room, the men wear jock straps when they shower, don't they? Which I don't think – who wears their underwear when they shower? I don't know. It's just a bit bizarre, isn't it? But I mean, a couple of things that I found about the movie, which is – one of the things which is really strange is, I don't know if you noticed, and I don't know if it's on the American version, but the audio is mono but only plays out of one speaker. Did you notice that? It may not have been immediately apparent if you're watching on the TV, but when you play it back on headphones, I had to split the audio onto two stereo tracks for it to come out on both channels, because at the moment it doesn't. So I'm not sure why that is, but it's every copy I've got, it's done that. So I think it must be something wrong with the original audio. But I really liked, I really enjoy Fatal Games. I mean, it is pretty dreadful in a lot of ways. If you're looking at it in the way of judging any other normal movie, but of course, when we judge slasher movies, we do judge them under certain rules. And I really enjoy Fatal Games. And what Eric said about the last 15 minutes, I think is pretty effective. And certainly, I think if we saw a decent, cleaned-up version of it, because at the moment, the only one there is a full-screen, very dark version, I think, we've sort of seen everywhere. A couple of things that I really liked about the film. Obviously, Annie, played by Lynn Banaschek, who is pretty awful actress. And I've got a great clip here of her with her father.
What do all these athletes do?
Daddy, I don't know about the future, but I know I'm a good gymnast, a damn good one. And if I've got this talent, I should be allowed to make the most of it. Don't take that away from me. Don't make me give it up. I have to do it, Daddy.
Yes. Oh my God, that sounds like a soap opera with the music in the background.
I just know I'm a good gymnast, a damn good one.
One life to live.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fairness, I get the impression that she was a athlete first, actress second, because a lot of the actors in it are very proficient at their chosen sport. Yeah. So I'm wondering if they went around sort of athletes and said, "Do you have any kind of acting ability at all?"
I wonder that. Because it was, I mean, the other thing you said, she had like a George Michael hairdo. It's a bit like that, a cross between that and Princess Diana. But funnily enough, her father was played by an actor. Well, not, I would say, I use the word actor advisedly, obviously, called Mel Klein, who was, I think, in this film, it seems, and when we talked to Spice, who was probably one of the best things in this movie, you know, she's very competent. Actress, and it was actually, I think the film says it's introducing her, so it's one of her earliest roles. But Mel Klein didn't have any other acting experience before or since, but he did have his other in a bit on IMDb, his other entry, he is a production accountant for Hide and Go Shriek. So it sounds as if what they did was just got together friends and family to fill in the bits that they couldn't get actors and actresses to do. Yeah. But
the director is one of the actors in it as well.
He is. He's Dr. Jordine, Michael Elliott, who was a mime. That was his previous life. So how a mime like Marcel Marceau or something suddenly ended up directing a slasher movie, I don't know. But The other things that I thought were that really jumped out at me with this was I love the way how the killer's always backlit. You know, the killer's always manages to have, when there's one scene especially where the killer jumps out and they are backlit, so you've got this perfect light around them, which is very nicely done. And also they're obviously very talented, being able to know where to stand all the time to get the best shadows behind them. I love the fact
they have their own production crew by following them around.
Exactly. They're like the Jennifer Lopez of slasher movie villains. I love the fact that they're giving them these injections to supposedly improve their performances. But they say to Lynn Banaschek, "We're going to have to give you injections to stop your breasts getting bigger." So those kind of retardation injections, which I think is a bizarre idea. So presumably to stop her giving herself black eyes when she's kind of training.
Yeah.
I also really love the black girl who gets chased around the thing, and I love she's in the shower with the one of the other girls, and she says, "I'm off to San Francisco," and she says that little song which you hear at the beginning when she goes,
brilliant,
"San Francisco, here I come," and it's just kind of, you know, she just looks really self conscious because she's being shot naked, buck naked, and having to sing this little ditty. And obviously, as you said, Joseph, it's got that trash aesthetic of having of her being chased naked, and also the chase with the killer killer chasing the boy on crutches. And I love his reaction when he opens up the lockers and finds his dead friends. It's hilarious. The other thing I thought about it, I mean, it's a shame. Some of it's a bit dark, but and not thematically, but just the way it's shot. And of course, it could be a bad video transfer, a bit like with Humongous, which we hopefully, when it comes out from Scorpion releasing, we'll see actually how it's meant to be shot. And obviously, I'd love to see this. I thought, as Spice is going to talk a bit more about this, and she's got a very funny story about her co-star, Shelley, which was the who was probably the worst actress. She's not quite Morgan in House and Sorority Row levels, but she's pretty bad, quite funny. Sally Kirkland, who played the... well, let's spoil it, because we always do spoil it. And I think you, if you've listened to enough of these, you know that we do spoil them so we can talk about things. And essentially, it's a bizarre ending because the way the film paints itself is a mystery. It's saying that there's the four characters. There's the coach, the Spice's character, the swimming coach, Dr. Jordan, who is the was Michael Elliott, the director, and also Sally Kirkland, who is the kind of the nurse physician character. They're the only ones who could have gotten to the office and done the old classic, which is crossing through the athlete's face on the picture. So you're led to believe the killer is one of them. And of course, it does turn out to be one of them. It turns out to be Sally Kirkland's character, who plays the character of Diane Payne, who was essentially an athlete who couldn't make it as a man, so had a sex change to become a woman, and got disqualified from the Olympics for having too many male hormones. Now, I'm not quite sure how that works or whatever, but and why it turned her into a psychotic killer, and why at the end of the film she has a newspaper hanging around in her little surgery bit, saying basically giving the kind of plot device for the final girl to see, and then go, my God, you're the killer. So I completely spoiled the film for you there. But anyway, it's not the joy in this film isn't necessarily in the whodunit aspect of it, because what is fantastic, I love, is Sally Kirkland is really good as the killer, because she has that voice, which we heard a little bit before, where it goes kind of, it's been put through a filter, so it kind of sounds like a half man, half woman voice. So she's basically playing a killer transsexual, which is a very difficult thing to pull off. But I think she does. No, I mean that. No, seriously. But
that's a double entendre.
Yeah, I know.
A transsexual that's difficult to pull off. they use a scalpel, I think.
Yes, we won't go
that. That earns an ooh or misses, and you need to get an ooh or misses sound clip for whenever we make these double entendres.
I will find one. I will find one. I wonder if I can find one now, actually, while we're talking. But I thought she was really good, and she actually played. She was in another slasher movie, which doesn't get much love, and actually, I don't enjoy it nearly as much as I do Fatal Games, which is Double Exposure. She plays a hooker in that, but she Sally Kirkland's had a pretty a long career, in the movies. She's still going now. And I did contact her, and I thought maybe she'd be interested in, being interviewed. But as I found, nobody wanted to be interviewed about this film at all, apart from Spice, bless her. So is this a new Mrs. we can use? Let's have a look.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's Frankie Howard.
I think it might take a little bit too long to find Frankie Howard. Will come up for a new Mrs., I'm sure, but I need to find a shorter clip. What else is there? Well... I think we've covered most of the things. We'll talk a little bit more about the film after we've spoken Spice, but I kind of guess this is as good a time as any to break. And so we'll bring you my interview, which I spoke to Spice a week or so ago, and she was absolutely lovely. She's a really good sport. And I say, I thought we're going to come up short and not find anyone to speak to about this film. I have tried in the past when I was writing Teenage Wasteland to get in contact with people. No one wants to talk about it. So listen to Spice and her recollection of the film, and then you may realise why that might be. Here is me talking to Spice Williams Crosby.
Where have you been for the last hour? I've been out jogging. I wish you'd spend as much time with me as you do with your jogging.
Shelley,
what do you want me to say? You're supposed to be one of the best swimming coaches in the country. And I still didn't win. Why the hell didn't I?
I wanted you to win as badly as you did, sweetheart. I swear to you. You still have enough time. You still have a chance.
Yeah, if Lynn drops dead.
Shelley.
This was for the Nationals, remember? And you were supposed to get me in them.
Shelley, I'm so sorry, darling. Don't worry. You're just gonna have to trust me now. I'll figure something out. Something will happen, you'll see. Things... they just didn't turn out the way I intended.
So absolutely delighted to have us with us today, Spice Williams Crosby, whose impressive resume includes being a renowned martial artist, countless acting roles, an impressive career as a stunt performer and coordinator, and now host of a new TV show giving women practical skills on how to fight back against violence. So thank you for joining us, Spice.
Oh, thank you, Justin. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you and see you over Skype.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. We're talking today, actually, with some friends about the internet and saying back in, we're talking actually about 1981 and saying how long ago that feels, but the internet was only been around for about 10, 15 years, isn't it? So to think that we could now be chatting from Bristol to California, it's amazing, isn't it?
I remember the very first computer my husband and I got, and it was a tiny little... you know, a monitor box with black and yellow writing, and he had to learn the whole DOS language. I mean, there was nothing, no such thing as an icon.
No,
he had to write the language out.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's great.
Kind of like learning Klingon.
Yes, absolutely. I can imagine. I mean, it's probably easier learning Klingon is DOS. I would have thought.
Yeah, probably. So. I believe so.
Excellent. Well, we're talking today about a film you did back in about 1982, Fatal Games. Does that sound about right? Is it shot in about 82? Because I think it said, when I was looking at Variety, it said that I think it was shot at the tail end of 82. It was going to post-production in 1983, and it came out in 84. Does that sound about right? It's going back a few years.
I guess it could be that long ago. It seems that seems kind of a long time ago, but I guess.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I do remember doing it. I remember everything about it. And even how I got the role is pretty interesting, and hooking up with Sally Kirkland.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Who I still know and have worked with a couple times. So I remember everything about it, but I don't remember what year we shot it in. I guess it was around that time. I mean, I guess you would know.
Well, I hope I've got it right. I'll check with Variety. But, well, what did you tell us? How did you get involved with Fatal Games?
I was acting, doing a lot of stuff on Days of Our Lives, a soap opera. Mm. And I had a manager. His name is Jakob Bressler. He's a martial artist who also was responsible for getting me into martial arts. And he took me in. He was casting. He had a casting office and managing on the side. So he got this movie that he was supposed to cast. And he said, there's a role here for this coach, this swimming coach, who also is supposed to be playing a lesbian. Would you be interested? And I go, oh, yeah, hell yeah. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So he brought me in, and that was actually the time I was trying to use my real name, my birth name, which was Marceline Ann Williams. Mm. And so nobody would call me that because they knew me from a rock and roll group that I belonged to for 10 years. I was signed with 20th Century Records and a staff songwriter, and my rock and roll group was called Sugar and Spice.
Okay.
So my twin sister did all the nice little ballads, and I did the wild and crazy numbers. So they couldn't tell us apart, but they said, oh, she's the one who does all the wild and crazy ones. Mm. She must be Spice. So that 1970, I got my nickname Spice. But as I went into the 80s, being an actress, I went, oh, I better go back to my real name, Marceline. But nobody would call me Marceline. But you'll find that that's the only, I think maybe that and one other TV show are the only times you'll see me listed as Marceline Ann Williams.
Yeah, because I wondered why you were listed as that. So that explains that. So you got involved, because you've obviously saying before, you're renowned for your stunts, but I think you did your stunt career started after Fatal Games, isn't it? It started about 84. Is that right?
Well, it actually started off a little bit earlier than that because I heard about a movie they were looking for wrestlers.
Okay.
And it was all the marbles they were looking for this. And wrestling was big, especially for female wrestlers at the time. It was such a, it was like female bodybuilders. Nobody, oh my God, nobody ever heard of that. And we were starting to come out, you know, come out of the closet.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went and I trained with Mildred Burke, who is a world-renowned female wrestler, and of course she's dead now, but during the Depression, that's how she made her money. Mm. She'd walk into a bar and she'd say, for a dollar, I'll pin any one of you brutes. And so they'd go, oh, yeah, 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 because she was a little thing.
Mm.
And so they'd put a dollar down, and she'd just wrap her legs around the guy's neck, take him down, and pin him. So she became this world-renowned Mildred Burke, the most famous female wrestler. So I sought her up. And I said, I want to train to be a wrestler for this movie. And I never got the part on the movie, but I was hired directly after that on a TV series with Lee Majors called Fall Guy.
Right.
And
yeah,
I don't know if you guys get that or you know
we
that
We did get it
show.
In the UK. Yeah, yeah, we did.
So so that on that show, I wrestled a lot and hit the ground, and there was a stunt coordinator named Judo Jean LaBelle.
Mm-hmm.
He's world renowned for he held the judo championship in Japan as an American for 5 years. He was a world renowned wrestler and a stuntman. And so after the show, he came to me and he said, "You know, you did really well. You'd make a really good stunt girl." And I said, "Excuse me, I'm an actress."
Yeah.
And he said, "Yeah, well, while you're starving to death trying to be an actress, would you like to learn how to make some money being a stunt woman?" I said, "Well, what do I have to do?" And he said, "First, you have to keep your mouth shut. And then secondly, you got to listen to me." And I'm like, "Wow, that's a stunt right there." So he trained me on motorcycles, stair falls, judo. I played one of the first jobs he got me. I played a judo instructress with Rock Hudson.
Really?
And Jackson
Lea.
Yeah.
And
I got to work with the most gentle, kindest, most wonderful man was Rock Hudson. So I got to work with him. Little by little, I heard about a role that they were looking for a world-class bodybuilder, and they couldn't find any bodybuilders that could, you know, act. So I started training, and I went in and I landed that job. That was Getting Physical with Sandel Bergman and Alexandra Paul. Mm. And so now all of a sudden I have muscles and I have the ability to fight, and they were starting to hire me as an actress who could do stunts. And it just kind of blossomed from there. For many, many years, I did martial arts on movies and TVs. And it was around 1990 that a sensei meaning teacher, was a stunt guy named Ricky Kahana. And he said, "You want to learn how to really fight?"
Mm.
I said, "Well, everybody's choreographing me to do these stunt fights, and I'm hitting the ground, doing stair falls, going over banisters, out windows, punching these guys." And he goes, "Yeah, but cameras don't hit back."
Mm.
And if you ever get in the ring and learn what it's like, then that's real fighting. So I said, "Okay, I'll give it a shot." Boy, the first time I got hit, it was like, "Whoa, I don't like getting hit. This is not fun." He goes, "Yeah, that's why you got to learn how to block."
Mm.
So that started my martial arts journey. And now I'm a third degree in Arju Kempo, which is 5 combatant styles. I'm a first degree in Eskrima, which is with sticks and knives. It's Filipino. And I'm certified level A, going to level B in Israeli Kapop, which stands for Krav Panino Panin. It's face-to-face combat.
Yeah.
So when I take my level B degree in August of this year, I'll be the only woman in the United States that will have that level. And you have to be sanctioned by the Israeli Ministry of Education.
Wow, that's very impressive. I must admit, I don't have anything like that. The only thing I think you and I share in common is we're both vegan. So,
oh, you're vegan?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Oh, good for you, buddy.
Yeah, well, good for you too. So,
you've been vegan?
How long? Well, I've been vegetarian about 25 years, and I've been vegan for the last 7 or 8. So,
oh, you're me.
Yeah, sorry?
Well,
yeah.
too young. I've been vegan 30 years.
Wow.
Over
Yeah, I think you went vegan about 1980, didn't you? I think I was reading.
I was turning. I was a vegetarian around 1979. Mm. And then I just went, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with anything coming out of a cow's tit, period. Yeah. So I just cut out all dairy. And then someone one day said, you know, what do you eat? And I was telling them, and they go, well, you're a vegan. And I said, what's that? I didn't even know. Yeah. It suddenly just evolved because I wanted to get healthy. And then the healthier you get, I just didn't want to contribute to the pain and suffering of animals.
Well, exactly. The same for me. That's the reason I went vegan. I went vegetarian when I was 15. I'm 42 now. So it's been, you know, there's no going back. So
no, there's not. No, I know. Yeah. Well, you know, you look like you're 20 years old.
Do I? Oh, well, that's Skype for you. Well, you're looking great as well. You're looking great as well, Spice. So that's the vegan diet keeps us young. So, yeah, but back to Fatal Games. Did you do any stunts on Fatal Games? Because at the end of it, there was somebody obviously doing stunts with the end shot when the killer falls off the scaffolding. That wasn't you, I take it.
No, I didn't do any stunts. I was just hired to play the coach.
Mm, mm.
The only thing I do remember, I remember working with everybody, and it's pretty interesting. I do remember that I had this supposedly big kiss scene with the blonde girl, who was the girl that I was training to swim.
Yeah.
And she apparently was also my lover.
Mm.
And I had this big kiss scene, and I was thinking, oh, that's cool, you know, to experience a kiss scene with a pretty blonde. I mean, either way, you can't complain, you know, so I was kind of looking forward to it, you know, to step out of yourself, and I mean, God knows, I've kissed a lot of other really strange people, from from creatures and to people like Michael Berryman on The Guyver, and I've kissed a lot of interesting-looking people, but this time I got to kiss a pretty blonde.
Mm.
And we broke over Christmas, and she came back, and we were ready to do that kiss scene. And she said, oh, I can't do this scene now. I said, why? And she said, because I've become a born-again Christian, and it's not going to work.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. I said, okay, that's...
Really? How's that tie into it all? So I wound up, if you remember that scene, I wound up kissing her on the forehead.
Yes, because I say it's one of the few horror films that's actually got a lesbian character who is actually, because it's quite, well, I say it's a positive character. Obviously, you're sleeping with a student, so that's probably not the best thing.
But I think that's legal. But
but you're kind of, she's a nice character, isn't she? She's quite a strong character. It's actually a shame she doesn't come back at the end of the film, because I kind of imagined she'd actually come in and save the day. But that unfortunately wasn't the case to be. But do you have any, what memories do you have of making the film?
Well, memories of having things being rewritten at the last minute. You know, we would come in and we'd go into a big boardroom and sit down, and they'd hand us new sides, you know, new pages.
Okay.
And this would be written out and this would be written in, and just having to have to learn things on the minute.
Mm.
Working with Sally Kirkland, she was amazing.
Mm.
She was very much into being an acting teacher.
Mm.
And so we would actually take time aside after lunch and talk about characters, dissecting the background of how we approach our acting, how we approach our characters. The main thing for me was I was a coach, but I'm a woman, and I have desires for this young girl.
Mm.
The most important thing was not to play a lesbian, because, you know, you can't play lesbian. You can't play Klingon. You can't play drunk.
Mm.
You have to play the intention, the conflict, the love, and picking all these actions. Acting is a verb.
Mm.
So you can't really play a noun.
Mm.
You have to play the verb, the action. So she was very, actually, probably some of my greatest memories on that film was talking with Sally Kirkland about approaching characters and making sure they were real, and that the scene always was about what I wanted, where my conflict was, where the love was, and not about her being, like, she couldn't play being a killer.
Mm.
She had to play what what her love, what her conflict. She had to play this person with a problem, not a killer. So I was that was actually an acting. Every time I showed up on set, I was getting good acting advice.
Yeah, well, Sally's brilliant in that film, isn't she? She's very convincing. But it was, I kind of got the impression that it was a little bit of a troubled production because it had quite a strange heritage, didn't it? Because the, if I'm right in thinking, the person, I think who wrote it, or there was, Raphael Brunel, who was the son of Louis Brunel, who's the father of surrealism, which is quite a strange thing. And there's Christopher Mankiewicz, who played the coach, who was the son of the director of All About Eve and the classic Hollywood films. So, it was kind of not necessarily.
And then there was a producer. His name was Michael.
Michael Elliott. Was that the?
Yes. Michael Elliott.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a troubled production. It seemed like their first time all together. They weren't all. They weren't a tight running ship. So, you know, it was a troubled production, and I never saw any of them after that whatsoever.
Okay.
So.
Because it's one of those films that hasn't... Because what I love about looking back at some of those probably forgotten films, because I think Fatal Games, you probably don't... Do you get asked about it at all? Is it a film that people ask you about?
Very silly, but it had another name.
It was Killing Touch, wasn't it? It was the Killing Touch.
Killing Touch.
Yeah.
It was called the Killing Touch. So I remember one time somebody did ask me, you know, about Fatal Games, and I was like... I don't think I ever worked in that.
Okay.
And they said, yeah, you worked in it. And I said, no. And they said, they told me the story. And I said, yeah, but it was called The Killing Touch. And they go, no, no, no. They changed the name to Fatal Games. So I didn't know about it.
Because do you know, because it actually came out in the UK as The Killing Touch, but I don't think it got released at the cinema. Do you remember it? Did you get to see it at the cinema?
I saw it because I remember that after... after I finished working on it, there was a bunch of other shows that I was working on. I started guest starring on a bunch of TV shows. I had a TV series called Women in Prison, Fox's first sitcom. There was Mama's Families, My Two Dads. There were just a lot of TV shows, one right after another, that I started working on. So, you know, in when you go do an independent film, you kind of do it, they wrap it up, they show it for a screening, and then you move on, you know. I very rarely ever see any show I've been in. It's nice when people tell me that they saw me in a movie or a TV show, because then I'm thinking, oh, great, residual, cha-ching.
Yeah,
that's good.
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of...
I don't really see myself.
No, well, it's funny because it's one of those films that doesn't really get spoken about. And actually, I've had, you know, thank you so much, Spice, for talking to me, because I can't get anyone else to talk about the film. I've written to a few people, but no one seems to. I think it's one of those films that was kind of almost forgotten, because I think it kind of came out at kind of the end of the kind of slasher movie boom of the early 80s, and I think it didn't get much distribution, I don't think. And so people like Lynn Banishek, who was the, I think she was the main character. She seems to have fallen off the face of the earth.
There was another girl. She had long dark hair, and she had a little bit of an eye problem.
Okay.
I can't remember her name. I actually wound up training in the gym with her, and she went on to do a few other things.
Yeah.
And she was very sweet, but after that, I think she fell off. She had like a lazy eye, one eye it would turn in, and I don't know if she ever got it fixed. But she was very, very pretty and very sweet, so I remember her from that movie. But no, it seemed like everybody just kind of fell off the face, except for Sally. Sally went on.
Yeah, well, Sally's had a huge career, hasn't she? She's been in lots of things. And just obviously, I don't want to take up too much of your time, Spice, because I know you're busy.
Good.
Yeah, it's good.
You're the one who has to go to bed, not me.
Yeah, I know. It's starting to get dark out there. But the film, it was shot in California, wasn't it? Because I think it was set in Massachusetts, which it didn't look like Massachusetts to me, but I think it was California. Would that be right?
Yeah, we shot it here. The school was, well, I live near Hollywood, so if you drive south to, I think at the time it was, around El Segundo, around the Los Angeles airport.
Okay.
So I live more towards the San Fernando Valley, which is 45 minutes north of the LAX. And I remember driving towards LAX and taking some side streets off to this high school, abandoned high school at the time.
It was abandoned, was it?
Well, yeah, or either that or it was... Well, they had the pool, it had water.
Mm.
So we shot almost everything there, and I'm assuming maybe it was either abandoned or it was closed. It didn't seem like, because even during summertime, there's summer schools going on, and it was completely vacant, if I remember. That whole school was completely vacant.
So it's quite a creepy location then, isn't it? So it fit the story pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love abandoned schools and things. Yeah, they're all, I believe in ghosts, so I'm sure all those walls could talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, are you a fan of horror movies? I mean, have you done any other ones?
I am a huge fan of horror, gore, sci-fi. And my husband is not. My husband's a screenwriter, and he writes beautiful, beautiful things and biopics. I think I sent you to his website.
Yes.
Believeentertainment.com. Yeah. So he writes these beautiful things, and he's not a fan. So when my son turned like 8 or 9 years old, I introduced him to all these gore horror films. My husband was like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, first of all, I'll show him the stunts. I'll show him the gore." When I did From Dusk Till Dawn, I took him to the set, dressed him up as a little baby vampire and put him in George Clooney's hands and Quentin Tarantino's. And we had so much fun. And I taught him how much fun it is for special effects and all these crazy things. I put him in a couple movies as a vampire. I reserved the films when he got older, like Exorcist. And The Shining. Those things are psychologically too scary for a kid.
Mm.
But the gore horror stuff is fun. And so he's my best partner right now. When we sit down to watch a gore horror film or slasher or whatever, he's like, "Mom, you got to see Dead Alive. You got to see Reanimator, Street Trash. We just go to the lowest level." But I'm actually doing a thing right now called, I have a TV series that I just finished. I just worked on it. I'd love to work more on it, but it's called Death Valley.
Okay.
And it's going to be on MTV. I think it opens up here July 28th. I don't know if you guys get MTV over there.
We do, on cable. Yeah.
This is, have you seen Reno 911?
I've heard of it. We don't get that idea, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a goofy, absurd, over the top. Brainless police officers that just literally, and I work that show, they just come to you, give you a scenario, there's no script, and you just ad lib everything. I played this white trash woman in a barbecue gone wrong scene with these two cholo boyfriends, and we broke bottles over each other's heads, and I grabbed one of the police officers and threw him through the window. I mean, it's just crazy, over the top.
Yeah.
So this Death Valley is a cross between Reno 911 and Zombieland.
Wow.
And it's going to be so much fun because these silly, off-the-wall police officers are fighting right here in the San Fernando Valley, this, residential area, werewolves, vampires, and zombies.
Wow,
and every time
really cool.
they come across a werewolf, it's MMA style fighting. Every time they come across a vampire, it's very traditional martial arts. And then when they come across a zombie, it's just hardcore street fighting, face to face combat. And it's so much fun. It's silly. So that's coming out that I just played this really a banker who gets zombie-eyed. I become a zombie and there's a big fight scene. And then I just finished a thing called My Dead Grandma.
Okay.
And that's going to be fun. Drew DeWalt. I don't know if you're a fan of Drew DeWalt. If you Google him, Drew DeWalt, he's a director of some of the craziest sci-fi horror stuff. And so he's got this new show called My Dead Grandma. And I play the dead grandma.
Oh, really? Wow. I'll have to look out for that. That sounds amazing.
It's kind of like Monty Python gone horror. It's just so much fun.
Excellent. Well, it's fantastic to hear that your son enjoys, because it's nothing worse than being like the horror or the geeky loner and thinking, I want to watch horror movies no one else does. So has he seen Fatal Games?
Yeah, he's seen it. He laughed all the way through it. He was waiting for me to get the javelin. I said, no, I don't get the javelin. But, no, he's great. I was walking through the living room one day, and he goes, Mom, I just killed you. I said, excuse me? He goes, yeah, I'm playing a Star Trek game here, and your character came up, and I just killed you.
Oh,
I'm like, oh, that's nice. You know? Yeah, no, that's why I had to make him my gore horror sci-fi buddy, because my husband won't... He's not interested.
No. Well, I'm glad you've got him. So, well, Spice, I don't want to take up any more of your time because you've been an absolute star, and it's fantastic to talk to you. I'm really, you know, really pleased. You come across exactly as I thought you would. You know, fun, bubbly, vivacious, and vegan, which is obviously fantastic. So, thank you very, very much, Spice.
Stay in touch with me anytime you want to talk. Just give me a holler, and we'll make a date. Any other shows? I've done a lot. I played a lot of witches, bitches, whores, alien creatures, biker broads, zombies, vampires, you name it. So anything you want to talk to me about, I'm yours.
Brilliant. Okay, well, you're absolute star, Spice, so it's brilliant to speak to you. And have a great day, and thank you ever so much.
You bet. Have a wonderful evening, and say hi to all.
Will do. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Come on, Frank. Something's definitely wrong. Wait a minute. I'll help you out. What are you talking about? I'm talking about Joe Ward. Nobody's seen him for 2 days.
Well, let me tell you something. Joe Ward is weird. That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, well, what about Nancy Wilson? Is she weird, too? And Sue Allen? She hasn't been heard from for 4 days. And the strangest part is, nobody's willing to talk about it.
Oh, come on! Now, there's got to be a rational explanation.
Well, what do you think? The winners are quitting? I think something terrible's happening here at the Academy.
Like what?
You want my theory? I think they're dead.
Oh, David, lighten up.
Hi, this is Lar Park Lincoln from Friday the 13th, Part 7. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Okay, and thank you very much to Spice. I say, what a lovely woman. And it was an absolute pleasure speaking to her. And so thank you ever so much, Spice, for taking the time to speak to me earlier this week. So, yes, been talking about Fatal Games. As ever, after the interviews, talk a little bit more about the background about the film. I'll pass this over to you guys in a second. But just to say, I have got a few bits and pieces. But it's actually one of those films, it's incredibly difficult to find pretty much anything about this film. It really seems like most of the people who worked on it, apart from Spice, don't want anything to do with it. So, you guys, did you find anything else about the film?
I found out, the only thing I found out about it, it's not really about that movie in particular, but I also found out that the movie Heathers was shooting, original title was called Fatal Games. That's all I found.
Yeah. Mm.
I found out
not
that
much,
it was...
Not much.
I found out that it was very surprisingly co-written by the son of Louis Buñuel, the Spanish surrealist filmmaker.
Mm.
One of the co-writers is Rafael Buñuel. I also found out that Shuki Levi, is it? The Israeli composer who wrote the song Take It All the Way. Mm. He has had a very long career, and he wrote the music for many of the cartoons I used to watch in the early 80s, like Ulysses 31, He-Man, and Inspector Gadget, the Mr. T animated series, and one that I never knew existed and I can't believe exists, the Rambo animated TV series.
Oh, you never saw that?
No, I didn't even know they had one.
Oh,
taking an 18s rated character, an R-rated character, and making a cartoon show out of him.
That's hilarious. Well, I mean,
they did that with the Toxic Avenger.
Did they?
Yeah, they had a cartoon about the Toxic Avenger. They turned it into a kid's show.
Oh.
And that was obviously R-rated, the first one was, anyway.
And I also found out that Michael O'Leary, who plays Frank in the film, is now the head of Irish budget airline Ryanair.
Oh, really? Wow.
No.
Okay.
They have the same name. I'm just making the assumption that they're the same person.
It was also a soap opera.
It's me struggling to find facts about Fatal Games.
Well, you see, this is a difficulty, isn't it? How about you, Nathan? Have you found anything?
Okay, everybody. I know this is going to be crazy, but I actually do have a couple of things.
Wow.
And this is weird.
I never do. But I know that Brink Stevens, who is, you know, a classic. If you know horror, you've heard the name Brink Stevens. Mm.
Yeah.
She was one of the extras in the shower scene. It was one of her first, you know, roles, you know, aside from Slumber Party Massacre. And the body double for the main girl, the one who's getting massaged naked, the body double is Linnea Quigley.
Mm.
So there.
Yes. I mean, that's that scene where Lynn Banishek is being massaged by the killer, basically, or she doesn't know she's the killer. And she's about to, the killer almost kind of, what, how can I put it, slips her the finger.
Puts her hand up her butt crack almost.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And she goes, she kind of goes a bit like boss-eyed and goes, I've got to go, and then runs off with a towel around her. But they do such a bad job with that, don't they? Because her hair and Linnea's hair are, they're roughly the same colour, but it's completely different shape, isn't it? It's almost, I think Linnea's got like a ponytail. They do such a bad job with that. But yeah, because I'd heard that Linnea was in it and I was looking for her and I didn't know. I thought she was, I knew she was going to do some nude scenes in it. But yeah, no, thank you for pointing out, Nathan. I wouldn't have known that. So that's really good to know. Just a few things that I've found out about the film, and I say it's incredibly difficult to find out anything about this film. I think, basically, as I said before, it was filmed late 82, and as Spice said, they broke over Christmas, and they came back and filmed a little bit after, into early 83. The film was in post-production around about March 1983. Now, I think the back of the box I've got of I read out, it says that they're training, or they're competitors for the 1984 Olympics. It doesn't actually make that clear, I don't think, in the film, but I think that's what they were aiming for, that they were not competitors, but they were training or for the tryouts for the American team. They're talking about trying out for the nationals. Just a few other bits and pieces. It was filmed under the title The Killing Touch. It was advertised in Variety that way, but there's no evidence. Well, not saying there's no evidence it got a release, cinema release, because I've actually got a one sheet, an American one sheet of the film under the title Fatal Games. But I've found no evidence it actually played anywhere. So whether or not it did, I don't know, because Spice says that everyone left the film and just went their separate ways, and she completely forgot about it. And when someone talked to her about Fatal Games, she said, "I wasn't in that movie," just repeating what she's already said, but she didn't know the title had been changed. So it kind of seemed to pretty much disappear. It obviously got a cinema release, not in the UK. I don't think it got released here in the UK at the cinema, but I've got a cinema poster from Belgium. So it got a Belgium release under the title of Le Joy de la Mort or something. It also got released in Netherlands, in Holland, under the title Olympic Nightmare. And supposedly it is 2 minutes longer. Now, that may be a blessing or a curse, depending on how you feel about the film. But it's supposed to be more explicit, but I've never come across this this release of it. Yep. I'd like to. I've been looking for it. I've been trying to hunt down an old Dutch VHS version of it, but I can't find one anywhere. But I'm sure Eric and Nathan and Joseph will back me up on this. If anyone who's hunted for an elusive longer version of a film quite often finds out that people are talking bullshit about them, and it's probably no different at all. What else is there? Lynn Banishek, as Eric's probably said, she was probably an athlete, which explains her lack of thespian skills. She went on to be cheerleader number 3 in a film called Samson in 1984. That was pretty much all she did. There's, as we've also said, there's Joe, the guy who played Joe, Nicholas Love, was in The Boogeyman. Again, I tried to track these people down, can't find them anywhere. They're certainly not interested in talking about Fatal Games. I wrote to probably about 12, 13 people, and Spice is the only person who got back to me. So, you know, there you go. What else was there? I found a really strange fact about the film was that you couldn't really make it up, but the film was under investigation by a certain body who were set up by the government to find out if films were featuring too much smoking. And there was a legal document which I stumbled across on the internet, And it says that we are currently reviewing this script for possible placement of RJ Reynolds products. We will report further in our monthly report. And it says perhaps the most telling fact is the fact that Rogers and Cohen were working hard behind the scenes to get RJR products placed in a film called The Killing Touch. So it was some government investigation to find out whether or not there was too much smoking in films. The irony, of course, I don't think anyone smokes in Fatal Games, but there was a company that really, really wanted to get smoking into the film, which is just bizarre. Is the RJ Reynolds, or is that a tobacco name that you're familiar with, Nathan and Joseph?
No.
No, okay. Well, obviously they weren't very successful in getting placements because obviously gone bust.
Yes, that's the...
Hello?
Do you want to finish your thought?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, no, I was just saying yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. I say it's... Oh, yes, of course. One other thing was the guy who plays the coach, who is not a particularly good actor either. He's quite funny. I think his name's Christopher Mankiewicz, who was the co-writer of the film, along with Raphael Brunel, who was, as Eric said, is the son of the creator of Surrealism, or one of the co-creators of Surrealism. And Mankiewicz was the son of the director of the very famous Hollywood director, who was... I don't know what his name is, but I know he was the director of... who directed Betty Davis in All About Eve. And he was a very successful director in the 40s and 50s in Hollywood. And so his son went on to make Fatal Games, which is possibly explains why his son doesn't want to talk about it.
He was Joseph L. Mankiewicz.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Eric. Yeah, one of the things I've always wanted to do, and is when I started doing Hysteria Lives and when I did Teenage Wasteland, was doing loads of research into these films. And out of all the films we've covered so far in the podcast, this has been the one that's proved the most elusive and the most difficult to find any background information on. I think we've done pretty well. We've got the interview with Spice and we've dug up some stuff, and this is going to be, well over 2 hours, this podcast. But considering the amount of people that are in the film, it really, it's just difficult to find any information. But there you go, which means there's a lot more stories out there to be tapped, and hopefully one day we'll have a Fatal Games 0.5 when we get to speak to some more of the cast, but who knows when that will be. So have we got any other points, anything else you want to say about Fatal Games before we wrap up?
I'm just curious, since we talked about artwork, what's your guys' favorite artwork for Fatal Games? Because there's two different ones that I know of.
I know three or four, actually. Yeah,
okay. So what's y'all's favorites?
I really like the one sheet poster, which has got the killer hovering, not hovering, but like above with the javelin, and then it's got all of the athletes, and it's kind of ripped all of the it's in shreds, with like it's almost like a photo is being ripped up, and they're all kind of the athletes are kind of like a basically a ripped up poster with the killer hovering over. The other one is the British video release, which I've got, which has got the woman who's got her arms stretched out and she's running through the white line, and behind her is a blood splash, and she's also got a blood splash on her stomach, as if she's been hit with a javelin. There's a couple of others, isn't there?
There's one with a hand holding a medal, and there's blood dripping.
Medallion. That's the one I like, with the medallion in the hand. That's my favorite.
Okay.
And Justin, I haven't seen the one that you mentioned first. I'd like to find that see that, if you know where I can see a picture of it.
What, the one sheet?
Yeah.
It's the one. Yeah, because I bought it, bizarrely, I bought it from somebody in Sweden about 4 years ago. And it says printed in America, but I wonder if it was just printed and the film never got a release, or got a release in one cinema or something like that. So I imagine it's quite rare. It's in I think it's in Teenage Wasteland, actually, but I'll dig it out and put it up for you so you can have a look at that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
What about Eric?
Yeah, I'm only familiar with the two that I think you mentioned, the one holding the medallion and the one with the girl with the blood splash behind her. And of the two, I prefer the one with the girl on the front, I'd say. I don't think either of them are spectacular, but...
No,
I like the dividing opinions here.
Yeah, and there's the other one. There's a Killing Touch, which is the which has got a montage of scenes from the film, a painting of that. And
yeah, I saw a actually on for sale on some eBay type site. It might have been even been eBay, but there was a video release of it, and it's called it's called Fatal Games, also known as The Killing Touch, and both titles are in big letters. Have you seen that? I think it might have been a UK release.
Yeah, maybe that's the one I'm thinking of. Because the other one I've got is the Belgium film release poster, which has got the killer, in the background with the javelin, and in the front there's a big gold medallion, which is not the best one, but it's surprising it got so many different video cover releases. But will this film...
I was just going to say, if people want to check out that one sheet you were just mentioning, Justin, page 148 of Teenage Wasteland.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and there's a great poster of Silent Madness opposite as well.
Yes. No, that is a brilliant poster, the Silent Madness, isn't it? So, okay, well, I can't think of anything else to say about Fatal Games. I think I've kind of I've drained myself of...
I just wanted to say, I know you've already mentioned the part where the killer's revealed and they turn the pitch down on Sally Kirkland's voice. I really found that scene to be exceptionally creepy in a movie that's so cheesy. I think she does a good job of kind of going batshit insane in that scene. Plus, with her voice being taken down a few octaves, it kind of gives it it's a certain ambiance, I think. It kind of stands out amongst all the campy, corny stuff, but I really like the ending to the film a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen reviews saying that Michael Elliott seemed like he put all his efforts into the last 15 minutes of the movie. And certainly, it's like Spice was saying, she was saying they were getting new pages of script every day, and it was obviously a very troubled production. She didn't go into too many details about why it was troubled, but obviously things were going wrong. And I imagine making a film, any film, must be very stressful. And there's lots of different things. We only see the finished product on the screen, but there's all sorts of things with money running out, actors not being able to act or not turning up, or all sorts of different things. So, and I think that's reflected in the film, that it's amazing how coherent it actually is. And one positive you can say about Fatal Games is it's not one of these films that takes forever to get going. You get a murder pretty much every 15 minutes, don't you? And they become increasingly ridiculous. And obviously, the other I've seen people say is that that the murders are very repetitive, because of the javelin. But I think it's a great weapon. And I think it's done really effectively. My favourite shot, I think, is in the film, is like when Annie is running down a corridor being chased, and the killer throws the javelin, and it goes into the wall behind her. I think it must have been on a rope or on a string or something, but it looks really effective. But I think someone else pointed out the other thing is that the killer can hit a teenager from 500 yards away, but he can't hit Annie from a few feet away, or she can't hit it. So, but I do love the other thing I do really like is the final shot. Well, is the ironic killing death scene of the killer who. Obviously, she's gone mental because she couldn't handle, or her male side couldn't handle the fact that she would never be a winner. And she dies by being impaled on a statuette, doesn't she?
Trophy.
And so that's kind of a nicely ironic ending. I just think it's a shame. I was hoping that, Spice, I was hoping she would come in at the end or something else would happen. But it, it's a bit of an anticlimax in some ways, but it was a nice, very fitting ending, basically.
See, what I always wondered is if the killer was, upset that they were never going to be a winner, I think they could have been a winner with that kind of strength. I mean, throwing a javelin 500 yards, lifting someone off the ground with a javelin in a swimming pool. I mean, wow, this person's obviously very athletic. I'm sure you should have just stuck it out a little longer there, buddy.
Well, didn't it say it said that they were disqualified from the Olympics because she had too many male hormones, wasn't it?
I must have missed that.
Well, that was just kind of that was on the newspaper that she had that dropped on the floor that Annie saw and then set the whole chase scene rolling. well, as I said before, it's kind of ridiculous. Why on earth would she have a newspaper saying, "Hi, I'm the killer," just hanging around at work? It's just a bit bizarre. But that they're obviously looking for a plot device or something to push things forward. But yeah, it was that's Fatal Games, and you know, I wish I could tell you more about it, but I think we've, you know, we've chewed the cud for, you know, well over 2 hours about a film, which I thought we might have difficulty talking about for this long. But I hope you've enjoyed listening, and we have plenty more coming up. And to take us out, we're going to have that wonderfully cheesy theme tune in its entirety to take us out, and that is Take It to the Limit. So what we're going to do is we're going to take it to the limit.
Take it all the way.
We're going to take it all the way. See you next time. Yeah.
To disqualify you now. I don't like to have to disqualify you, but that's what I'm going to have to do!